Here comes the video part.
Ah!
Which is for some
faces.
Reason.
Oh god. My shirt blends into my skin. Okay.
Oops. Sorry, we were using like the most basic standard definition camera that we have because it's the only thing.
I have a better one.
Oh, well, I wish you'd said that like hours ago.
Or before we didn't know what we were doing.
But you.
Well, I mean, I knew what you were doing, but I didn't know what. I assumed your equipment was better than mine.
No. Like all of my equipment except for that web camera because I've had that webcam for I don't know how long.
Okay. Yeah, no, I have a better one that does 720.
Oh, wait, I forgot to...
Next time.
You see nothing.
Nothing to not be seen. How's that gonna stay?
It didn't help at all. So, we're doomed. We're just doomed.
Okay.
We have too much natural light in our house. It's clearly a problem.
Things to complain about to the landlord.
We do, but we're too lazy. So, this is episode 35, of the show of Feast and Famine. This is also our first live episode. I'd like to do this a little bit more often, but we'll see.
Uh-huh.
With a better camera, since apparently we have one.
Now we know.
Yeah, and we are going to be doing a artist-focused episode, which
cool.
We sort of decided at the end of last episode. Which, thankfully, I think happened in a part that wasn't robot-voiced, so you actually got to hear that. Shoot me now. There was literally an hour and 25 minutes of the last episode that is never going to be seen again.
Yay.
But yeah. So we decided that, I think we were trying to decide between two. One whose name I can never remember if I'm not looking at one of his cards. But he's the guy who did like Sagu Mahler. And if you see his art, just like, oh, that guy. Because he's got he does this really interesting way of doing like dirt and especially debris in the background. And it's just like these weird sharp angles, and he's very obvious when it's him.
Right.
And I can never remember his name. Swanland. Something Swanland. It was between that and Matthias Kollros, who...
Just every time we see his stuff, we get excited.
Yeah, we get really excited, and he's one of the more new artists to Magic. Like, his oldest art is from M13, so the oldest art he's ever done for Magic was in 2012. So, maximum 2 years ago. And in a little bit of the research for this... Sorry, I have a weird thing with my hair, and it's pissing me off.
You do.
Yeah.
Mine's also being weird, but it looks acceptable, so I'm not going to complain.
Yeah, glory to standard definition. We discovered that... Well, mostly I discovered, because I did most of this research while you were watching TV shows.
I was nursing your sick girlfriend back to health.
Yes, who is in the other bedroom, cursing us, probably.
Kicking her off of the TV. Good.
If you couldn't hear that, she's watching Gilmore Girls, which is possibly the best thing for her sickness. We might have to make her close the door, because that might be audible. But
I can do it.
Okay. So we decided that we wanted to talk about Matthias Kollros, since we saw his first bit of art, well, to us, on Flamerite in Conspiracy, and we spent, God, how long talking about that one piece of art?
I don't know.
Yeah, far too long.
Mm-hmm.
And we noticed that he had a very distinct lack of cards in Khans of Tarkir until we realized, wait, he did every single one of the charms. Which is why the first card that's up here is the Abzan charm. Plus, I think going through the charms got cut out of our last one. So a lot of the charms have this really nice thing where they in some way showcase the actual symbol of the clan.
Yeah.
While also...
And, like, it's a consistent motif throughout all of them, but, like...
Yeah, I'd almost say that a lot of them tend to have that sort of art of the teamer, where it's very undefined borders between the focus and the background.
Yep.
Like, in this, it's flame, which, as we'll see as we go through a lot of Matthias Kollros' art, he does flames beautifully.
Yeah, it's kind of disgusting.
Like,
it's just...
He does flames in ways that most people just cannot imagine.
Lighting, like, in general, he's just magic at it.
Like, when you look
like
at Abzan Charm,
is a wizard.
Yeah, when you see Abzan Charm, you've got this sort of what looks like a built-up bonfire at the base with this sort of shooting...
Plume?
Like a plume of fire that has almost an absence of light in the center, forming the scale that is the symbol of the Abzan.
Yeah, and there's a rock or something poking through.
Yeah, but then you've got all of this sort of, like, lighting from the fire that goes around the base of it in these really beautiful ways. Oh, God, it's so well done.
Yeah.
I just realized something. I forgot to actually, like, start the local recording so I can post this to YouTube.
Silly.
Yeah. Sorry about that local recording. You're probably picking up right here. Mm-hmm. We are just mentioning again that this is going to be our Matthias Kollross episode.
Because his work is stunning, and we always get so excited.
It's beautiful. I should have brought my other computer so I could sit it over here with, like, see if there's chat, but...
Oh. Eh. That... Yeah. We'll be more prepared next time.
Yeah. I don't think we'll do this every time, but I think we should definitely do it, like, once a month at least.
Thereabouts.
Back when we were slightly more committed to trying to get the Patreon going, mm-hmm. this was one of the things that I was trying to set up as, like, a stretch goal. Like, we will promise to do this once a month.
Right, yeah.
So, maybe if we ever get back to actually working on that, since...
Yeah.
Like, the big problem with that right now is that I work full-time, you work full-time, and I go to school, and I eat school.
Yeah, and the alternate times as to when we work.
Yeah, and all of your free time now is when I'm in classes, because...
Pretty much.
I hate classes.
Yay.
Because I'm at that... There's a weird thing with my school that I don't think works with a lot of other ones, where you've got that whole... Most people don't pick their major until, like, junior year.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So you do all the busy work in the front half. With mine, you have to go in knowing what your major is.
Right, yeah.
So you do all that, the fun stuff, the specific stuff in the beginning, and then the back end is, oh... I'm
getting those random GEs out of the way.
Right, I have to do other crap.
Yeah.
So I just remembered one
That's
thing.
That's part of why I didn't end up going to the school I shipped you off to.
Yeah, hang on.
I was like, I'm not ready to commit to anything.
Oops.
What are you...
I'm moving this over here.
Okay.
Sorry, that'll get fixed on the screen in just a second, because things hate me. Where are you? I have to read
this
tiny non-arrowed text way over there.
Mm-hmm.
So sorry about that. Just wanted to fix that super quick.
What font did you use?
What?
So what font are you using?
I don't know. I did that in like 20 seconds. Right. It was just like,
whatever it was already set to?
No, that was one of the, like, slightly goofy ones that was just... Basically, our current setup was, this is a standard definition camera. It doesn't take up the entire thing. Neither does the card art. I better find something different to fill up that top corner bit.
Right, right. It's acceptable, it's just the font's bothering me.
Oh, so what I was saying about Obzon term, though, is you've got the, like, bonfire and the sort of plume of the actual flames, but then he has this beautiful... way of doing the light that's not only coming off of the fire, but also, like, things that are burning on the inside of the bonfire.
Yeah, the
Yeah, the little bits of fire, like, shining through, and the way it sort of radiates around.
It's this gorgeous... It's almost sort of sunset color-y and stuff, with the, you know, the orange into the pink and purple, and then into the blue.
And there's something a little bit odd about the way that it doesn't... Not odd, just very well done, how it sort of cuts off, because you're seeing... the backs of these people who are looking at it, there's no light being cast on that. Any light that's in existence looks like it's just coming from this bonfire. It's so well done.
And it's also very conceivable that they were the people who were, like, setting the fire, and you're part of an audience of people who are also, you know, at this.
And I do bonfire. Like that you don't get a lot of detail about them, but just from the sort of angles of their armor and such, you can tell that these are members of the Obzon houses. I'd bet that most of them are human, but... And we should probably go over what it does.
Right. So, want to do that one, I'll do the next one.
I don't know if the next card is actually going to be a charm, because I've just got it set up to sort of go through in alphabetical order.
Whatever.
So,
it's all good.
Obzon charm for an Obzon, which is white, black, green, is an uncommon instant with the new awesome formatting for charms, and I love this. So it's choose one, and then each one of them is a bullet point. So well done. So one option is exile target creature with power 3 or greater. That's pretty sweet. I'd pay 3 of any color for that, quite frankly.
Yep.
Or you draw 2 cards and lose 2 life. There's the black. That's really good, again.
Yeah.
Or distribute 2 +1/+1 counters among 1 or 2 target creatures you... not that you control.
Just any.
So it does have a minor downside if, say, someone were to... Actually, no, it doesn't, because someone could basically go, kill that thing, and I believe you... If they kill the thing that you were going to target, I don't believe if there are no other targets on your side, you have to target their thing. I think you can just go, well, instead I'll pick the... Like, I think the picking of the mode is one of the last steps. Like, actually upon resolution, but I'm not 100% sure.
Okay.
So, let's look at our next card. See, the problem
here is wearing glasses as well.
Yeah. I'll put on contacts next time.
I don't think I have any contacts with me.
So the problem
anyway.
Here, though, is that there's three monitors. So there's a monitor over there, which we're looking at the same stream y'all are.
Right.
Probably.
Y'all. We're not used to saying that.
I know. I was trained and it can't go away.
Mm-hmm.
Which is probably about 30 seconds ahead of the ones that you're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Then I've got one monitor way over there, which is where this thing is pulling the card data from Gatherer from. And then one over here that actually has the full Gatherer page with all of Matthias Kollross's art, along with the other thing we're going to look at later.
Mm-hmm. A lot of jogging back and forth between screens.
I would almost suggest watch this on YouTube when it goes up, just because you'll probably get to see this horrible, goofy setup.
Mm-hmm.
So the next thing, alphabetically, that he's ever done was... Archetype of Aggression, which I think this is one of the weirder archetypes, but I think he's really good.
Yeah.
But I also think he doesn't quite belong... He's from Theros, by the way, so this is a Born of the Gods card. Do you want to read it off?
Sure. Archetype of Aggression is a one colorless, two red, uncommon human warrior enchantment creature who's a 3/2. Read things inside out and backwards, as you've probably realized by now.
A little bit.
creatures you control have trample. Creatures your opponents control lose trample and can't have or gain trample. And it's kind of interesting and cool.
Every time I look at it, I always think that, especially this one, I forget that the archetypes were from Born of the Gods. And I assume that they were from, what's it called? One of the core sets. Because this guy in particular, I look at him and think that he's one of the... Oh, God. I can never remember their name. One of the races of humans on Mirrodin who sort of have, like, the metal growing out of their skin. Specifically, I always think he's from the group that Koth comes from, who tend to have, like, the big metal plates, especially around their arms. I wish I had not said that for some reason that just made me go like, what's wrong with you?
But I have those moments sometimes.
We'll see Koth later because he did I believe Kollross did a promo art for Magma Spray that featured Koth. So I'll try to draw a comparison to that again later just because it strikes me as a thing, but I don't know if anyone else really thinks that this guy looks like he's from Mirrodin. But I still really like it because... He did a lot more subtle with that whole Nyx sort of appearing in the shadows. Especially given that this guy is surrounded by bright red, orange, like light.
Light and flame. Yeah. Opposite of the Balrog, light and flame as opposed to shadow.
Yeah. And I like that there are still that idea that there are these sort of like shadowed areas that aren't quite completely in the light, so he has some of that sort of celestial background to him.
Just also the celestial, you know, little nuggets that we do get, of course, are done really well because that's their own little kind of lighting.
Just these little stars that if you weren't looking at it with the knowledge that that's just how they did these enchantment creatures, you'd almost go, like, it's light glinting off of his armor. And I think the only place where it doesn't clearly show up as part of his armor or this metalworking on him is there's a couple on his cloak or sort of like the tattered remains of a cloak.
Right.
But... Besides that, I like that it can very easily be played off like that, too. It's just a nice use. I don't think it's my favorite art he's ever done, but it's still nice.
Skillfully done, undeniably.
I think this next one is kind of meh. Like,
I believe in you.
I just opened it in the wrong way.
Do not believe in yourself. Believe in me who believes in you. One of these days I'll finish watching that all the way.
It's on Netflix now.
Okay. You need to give me the Netflix password. Yeah. I was about to say Wi-Fi, and I'm like, I definitely have that one.
If you're wondering what we're talking about, we are talking about Gurren Lagann.
Which two of our friends have been telling me to watch for years now, Taylor and Sam.
And since she moved in, I tried to make her watch it once, but we were very drunk.
And I enjoyed it, but it was just like...
I also had to spend most of that night fighting with the internet, because for some reason it would only load 5 seconds of any given video before everything crashed.
I vaguely remember this.
Yeah, it was
weird. This was like 3 months ago.
Yeah.
Goodness.
So the next card that we've got is Awe for the Guilds. For two colorless and red, this is a common sorcery from Gatecrash. Monocolored creatures can't block this turn. When the guilds cooperate, the guildless celebrate the peaceful society. When the guilds clash, the guildless just try to stay out of the way.
Nice.
I don't really know what the art is supposed to be here, honestly. Like, I think it's nice art, but I don't see how this associates in any way with the card or a lot of the themes. Sorry, this is a gatecrash. All of the guilds,
and it looks like there's a person at an altar that's sort of celebrating all of the guilds as opposed to, you know, a person being designated to just one. And I guess inherently all for all the guilds is sort of a tricky concept to convey.
There's also just something a little bit weird about the way that the art is set up, such that there's this symmetry, but at the same time there's two almost randomly selected guilds in the center. And I don't understand the choice of that, especially, like, why is Golgari at the top? From, I believe, two sets ago, in the Return to Ravnica set, there was a card whose name I cannot remember that had flavor text specifically saying that the Azorius had paid a significant fund to get their symbol at the very top of this. It was like a circle, and it was an artifact that you could pick two colors, and it was like whenever you played a card from one of those colors, you gained life or something like that. And yet we look here, and you've got Golgari at the top, and Orzhov in the center, and then on the left you've got four of the allied color guilds. Three of the allied color are red and blue allied? I can never remember.
I don't know. Blue is white and black.
Yeah, so you've got three of the allied guilds on the left side, one enemy. You've got two enemies on the right. It's just like weird choices here.
Yeah.
And I'm just not sure where the art is supposed to be going. It's one of those things where it's really nice art, but in the context of the guilds, it's just sort of like, it seems out of place. And I get the feeling that it's sort of a, like, miscommunication, where I think it's entirely possible that I don't think we saw Colros doing a lot of art in Ravnica, and it's entirely possible that he just was not familiar with the setting at this time.
Yeah, I think it's super critically analyzing it, you know, and then assuming there isn't, like, outside information and stuff, I think there's some missing things, but I think on, like, a very casual, just observant glance, you can sort of make some sense out of it, at least.
I'm still confused, though, what's with the sort of tree, almost woodish design? Like, it looks like it's supposed to be rock, but has this almost rootish design to it.
What I wanted to say is, you know, you were saying there was a lot of symmetry and stuff, and the you know, placement of the guilds and stuff, and I just thought it was a cool juxtaposition against the organic randomness of the tree.
That was the only thing I do could like draw. That. Actually, that seems really interesting. I still am a little bit thrown off by the fact that instead of a tree, it almost looks like it's supposed to be, like, petrified wood almost. But that would sort of make sense with Ravnica, seeing as it is a city without... It is a plain without forests where the city has taken over pretty much everything. So I guess it sort of works. Other way. So up next is actually a double card, which is one of my favorites. And we always get confused when we look at this because... Uh-oh, that's not going to quite work.
Okay, I believe. Maybe.
I can't really do anything there. Let's see. Hang on.
The quote of the testificates.
I think we might have to go on to the next one, because there's not really anything I can do about this on the fly right now. Sorry.
We'll troubleshoot for next time and hopefully remedy most of these issues.
Ow! I bit my tongue.
Oh.
Yeah, that was painful. Well, this one's all yours.
Okay. Coerced Confession. Four colorless and either blue or black. Sorcery, and I don't have all the little symbols memorized, so if you want to tell me what uncommon...
Gatecrash.
Okay.
Sorry.
Target player puts the top four cards of his or her library into his or her graveyard. You draw a card for each creature card you put into that graveyard this way. Ask the right questions in the right way, and truth is inevitable, Lazov.
So this is a Dimir card.
Yep.
So it's also a blue-black hybrid. This is really creepy art.
Yep. To say, like, the least.
I'm not entirely sure what's going on with that, with the guy on the right of the card's face. Yeah. But it's like he's got some creepy thing, like, propping his mouth open in horrible, disturbing ways.
Yeah.
And when we look at some of his, like, art outside of magic, we'll see that he has some really nice use of, like, chains and metal. But I'm also seeing his really nice use of light here again, where you've got this guy with, like, the waxed bald head, mm-hmm. and the one light in the room just gleaming off of it.
I think I love him because he reminds me of me, and that is a thing that I would do and stuff just to amuse myself.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I'm in some sort of position of power. My decision-making process is based off of what amuses me. And so I would do something like that. And then also glinting off the knife. And
I don't know why, but just the way that that light glints off his head is really terrifying.
Uh-huh.
Because it's just this emphasis of, like, it feels like it would be something that if you just saw someone out in the world like that, mm-hmm. you'd probably think, oh, that's kind of funny, or it's mm-hmm. someone trying to pull the whole going bald gracefully sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, it's just like, this is a guy who clearly does not care about any social conventions
uh-huh.
at all.
Yeah, he's got a nice Demir tattoo on his chest.
That is, I really like that.
Uh-huh.
And
I had a really good tattoo idea yesterday, and I'm really pleased with myself, but anyway.
For some reason, I like the idea that it's not sort of like a centralized tattoo. Mm-hmm. It's sort of off to the side,
yeah.
and it doesn't go straight down. It's got this sort of like minor tilt to it.
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't mm-hmm. quite fit in any of the ways that you mm-hmm. want it to.
Yeah.
And there's no pattern to it. I'm just like, I like that. It works so well with Demir.
Mm-hmm.
I also really like the way that he's got all of these tools mm-hmm. just strewn yeah. on this table.
But like, it seems like he wouldn't even need any of them, because you can yeah. see he's a well-muscled guy, and the way that his hand is, like, delicately, like, a lot of times, you know, you think of big muscle people, and they're a bit clunky, and you see that on, like,
yeah.
Dancing with the Stars, like, the football players, while they have the athleticism, they, like, yeah. don't know how to move their body in that way.
But he's got that creepy, but, sort of, yeah, like, the wiry muscliness.
The way where, he's holding yeah. the chain is just so, like, delicate and intimidating at
yeah.
the same time. And
it's that sort of, it's one of those things where something about this mm-hmm. makes me think that the person who's doing this torturing, like, he sees his profession as this horribly disturbing art form.
Yeah.
And that,
uh-huh. and he takes great pride in his work. And
yeah. And
every butchering is a masterpiece.
Yeah. And, oh, God, it just works so brilliantly.
Mm-hmm.
It's horribly disturbing. Mm-hmm. And I really like the fact that I think this sort of works with the idea of what milling is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because the idea of milling is that, okay, so in magic, flavorfully, your hand is basically supposed to be spells and ideas that are basically at the front of your mind that you're able mm-hmm. to go, mm-hmm. oh, huh, just
yeah.
like something fairly that you have, that came to your mind fairly recently that you can just use.
Uh-huh.
Your library is supposed to represent a, like, the culmination of all of your knowledge as this
right.
planeswalker who you're playing as.
Right.
And the idea of milling is actually, and they do this fairly well with a lot of Carter, especially with the Demir,
mm-hmm.
is that it is the active destruction of your mind.
Right.
And black has cards that are usually, like, you hunt through
yeah,
their...
That does go so well with
yeah.
Demir.
And black especially has cards that are like, hunt through your opponent's mind and
mm-hmm.
remove specific things.
Uh-huh.
And with Demir, they do this beautifully, because especially since this is a, like, this is torture to get information.
Mm-hmm.
You're destroying this person's mind.
Yeah.
Also, I'm getting information, so you get, like, cards
mm-hmm.
out of your library.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so beautifully done, and I think that the art really summarizes what this card does.
Uh-huh.
It's so good. So this is one from a Commander product, actually.
Mm-hmm.
From Commander 2013.
Mm-hmm.
I think I have this card.
Mm-hmm.
Decree of Pain.
Mm-hmm.
For 6 colorless and 2 black, destroy all creatures. They can't be regenerated. By the way, this is a sorcery. You can't do this at instant speed.
Mm-hmm.
Draw a card for each creature destroyed this way. Or you can, for some reason, cycle it for 3 colors and 2 black.
Mm-hmm.
But wait! When you cycle Decree of Pain, all creatures get -2/-2 until end of turn.
Mm-hmm.
I like this card.
Yeah.
Like, a lot.
Mm-hmm. What is this from?
This is,
I don't remember.
The Commander sets.
Okay. Right.
This is 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe, so, the rare cards, I believe, only appeared in, if it was a new card like this is, I believe that means they only appeared in one of the boxes.
Uh-huh.
And I believe this one appeared in the Mindseize deck, which is the one that was selling for quite a bit of money because it
mm-hmm.
had the True Name Nemesis that
uh-huh.
everyone went a little bit crazy for. Oop, yeah, there is chat.
What is this?
Sorry, we just went over the chat because we have too many things. Yes, that was totally the GIMP from Pulp Fiction in Coerced Confession. Most definitely. That was technically probably two GIMPs, but whatever. It was just creepier than the GIMP.
Okay. Mm. One of the many things of pop culture I need to wisen myself on.
Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, it's
Pulp Fiction. It's not really pop culture anymore.
I don't care. It's a thing that exists in the world that I need to see.
Yes, true.
That's my point.
So I believe this was from the Mindseize deck. Mm-hmm. And it's just, like, a killing field of angels.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can definitely look at this and go, it's a board wipe, but
mm-hmm.
there's not really a lot of flavor here, especially since mm-hmm. one of the practices that they've done with the Commander products is that they establish, like, they bring these characters in and then add them into the story later.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this is probably a thing that they might do an Uncharted Realms about, or they might have, because I've been bad about reading those.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, I don't think it's really his best.
Yeah, the one thing that comes to mind to say is that I feel like Colrose isn't afraid to use pink. Like, I feel like you don't see pink in a lot of other card art and stuff, but he goes there and...
And there was something that we saw pink in with our cons episode, and I think it was in the part that got lost.
Yeah,
but
probably.
Pink is definitely a color that's not often used, because... But a lot of artists have started using it, especially as sort of this,
I can't read it. I'm too far away.
Someone
even
in the chat.
My glasses.
Someone in the chat was, I don't know how I got here, but I've been sucked in. I don't think I can leave.
Welcome. Welcome to our
vortex.
Just
again, another explanation. So this is our first attempt at a live podcast from the show of Feast and Famine. We are a flavor podcast from MTGcast and our own site.
Yep.
Fingers
crossed we're doing okay.
Yeah. We talk about magic, especially art and flavor.
Yep.
And right now we're actually doing an artist-focused episode about the fairly recent-ish artist Matthias Colrose.
Mm-hmm.
And later we'll also get into some of the other stuff he's done.
Mm-hmm.
If you've ever heard of Fantasy Flight Games, he's done quite a bit of stuff for them in really cool ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think we should probably move on to the next
card. Because we don't have
as
much to say about this one.
Yeah. So, the next one, unfortunately, is another double card,
which
is
we don't have set up
derpy and
work.
Annoying right now.
Uh-huh.
So, you get...
it's Gatherer's fault, isn't it?
It's sort of Gatherer and sort of just the weird setup that that we're using.
Fellhide Spirit Bender.
Minotaur.
Yeah.
Sorry, I like Minotaurs.
Minotaurs are cool.
Yeah.
Minotaurs are cool. Three colorless and a red, rare creature, Minotaur Shaman. It was a 3/4 from Theros, or was that?
Born of the Gods.
Born of the Gods, okay.
Yeah.
Of the Theros plane.
Yeah.
It's where I was...
Totally Theros, though.
Yes. Inspired. Whenever Fellhide Spirit Bender becomes untapped, you may pay one and a red. If you do, put a token onto the battlefield that's a copy of another target creature, except it's an enchantment in addition to its other types. It gains haste. Exile it at the beginning of its next end step.
He's like Kiki Jiki, but bigger and punchier and not legendary.
Yeah, and then, just, drooling over the light in the background.
Yeah. This is definitely one of the... red cards where they really let him shine.
Mm-hmm.
Matthias has this beautiful work with light, and he does well with
any
light
color
that isn't strictly speaking warm or bright, but a lot of red cards tend to have these very orange and yellow themes to them.
Which lend themselves more naturally to glow.
Yes, and
luminosity of...
Yeah, and unlike a lot of artists, he does really well with fire.
Mm-hmm.
And those are colors and themes that we see a lot more with red.
Uh-huh.
And so,
colors that evoke fire, even if it's not explicit.
Especially with this one, where there's not really any spoken fire, but it's sort of the sun shining in behind him.
Uh-huh. It's a very burning plasma kind of light.
Yeah, it's sort of this idea that you're really getting the sun is sort of focusing down into this deep chasm that this one Minotaur is hiding down in.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just very well done, especially when we know that this is a Minotaur who's sort of drawing power from the gods of Theros to create these enchantment copies.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just very nice. It's very simple.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit of oddness when there's sort of this idea of light playing a big role here, and with Theros we actually saw that light was mostly related with Heliod, who is white-aligned.
Uh-huh.
But we also had to deal with the fact that Heliod was sort of like the Zeus character and mm-hmm. thought he was king of the gods, but...
Not so much.
Not so much at all.
Really, yeah. What does this one say? I can't...
It's the same guy whose name I'm not going to attempt to pronounce because the first part I can't read and the second part is Frijoles. I don't know anything about MTG, but I heard of Fantasy Flight Games from another podcast that makes some really cool stuff. I think I'll stick around through the Magic, has some great art. Magic definitely has been getting some much better art.
Yeah.
So... For anyone, I'm going to move on to our next card, but mm-hmm. for anyone who knows anything about Fantasy Flight, Kolros has done art for, he's done the second edition art for Dark Heresy, which came out like a month ago, and I still haven't had a chance to play it. It makes me sad. He's also done all of the, like, expansion packs for, what is it, Dark Crusade? Black Crusade.
I think we should reintroduce ourselves. We'd be like, hey, you're Steven, and I'm Stephanie.
We did. I think we might have skipped that, but so he also did the covers for, like, the Tome of Fate, the Tome of Excess, the Tome of Blood, and whatever the tome about Nurgle is. Mm-hmm. And he's done a lot of stuff for.
What should call it?
Oh god, it was probably like Tome of Plague, something like that. And he's done art for another Fantasy Flight game that I can't remember. It was something about Atlantis, I think, or something about Flame too.
More things I need to. Yeah. To educate myself upon.
Well, we'll be looking at them in just a little bit. So, oh no.
I don't know what I'm doing with my hands. It's supposed to be some sort of excitement woohoo thing.
Yeah.
That's what it's called.
So I think you did the last one?
I think so. Yes.
Yes, because it's the Fellheid Minotaur.
We have the best memories.
So, yeah. Ever. So next we've got another Theros card. This one's from actual Theros. Mm-hmm. This card is actually really good, and I enjoyed playing with it.
Mm-hmm.
So Feral Invocation for 2 colorless and a green. It was an enchantment aura. It was common with Flash, and it enchanted a creature and gave it +2/+2.
Mm-hmm.
Nylea's Sacred Lynx guards those who honor the Nessian Wood and hunt those who don't.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is really nice because there's a running theme that they were sort of showing us at the very beginning of Theros before we had a lot of information about how the, I can't remember this tribe anymore.
The
Setezans.
Yes.
That was it. How the Setezans had this sort of, like, weird duality where they... were friendly with Kerametra, the god of the harvest and the seasons and things, and Nylea, both of whom hated each other, but the Setezans were, like, this proud warrior race.
I feel like that's, like, a good metaphor for, like, people and legends and stuff, as they kind of are, like, the middle equal, equalizing ground and stuff between feuding gods sometimes.
But I really like this because, I mean, you've got this big spectral lynx and the fact that it's not Nylea having her... her, like, creature directly interact. It's the come down and help this person, like, help this person help the forest and things like that.
Right, yeah.
And it's just such beautiful art when you've got the lynx's eyes almost look like the stars that are used in the rest of the art.
Yeah.
Ugh, it's just very nice.
And just, yeah, the way that it's good, diverse range of luminosity and stuff. You have the really nice light pale yellows and whites and stuff, and then, like, the deeper, darker bluey blacks, and it's cool.
Yep.
It's cool. A lot of times you see a more controlled range and things.
So I think we're going to skip over a few here that just look kind of interesting, but not particularly our thing, to something that we've talked about before and really, really like.
Wonder what it could be.
The reason why we're basically doing this.
Uh-huh.
So this is Flamerite. This is a card that we have pretty much refused to shut up about since we first saw it.
It feels like there's always more to talk about.
So do you want to actually read this one? Because I think I read the last one.
Did you?
And I have coffee.
Oh, okay. Flamerite, one red, one white. Uncommon creature, human artificer, is 1/1. One colorless and tap. Put a 1/1 colorless construct artifact creature token with defender onto the battlefield. Or just tap. Sacrifice a creature with defender. Flamerite deals 1 damage to target creature or player. Those who can't conspire, create.
It's so good.
Mm-hmm.
So, for one thing, I think we discussed this, and honestly, I'm kind of tempted to jump over and check something real quick. So, just for this one, I think we're going to jump over and show you the other screen that we're going to be using a little bit later. My dog is weird. Oops. Hey, except it decided to mess with itself.
What have you done? Well, Ed, what have you done?
This was working earlier, but apparently it hates me. So we actually have the version that he himself has posted online that works a little bit better. And there used to be an image in the background, but apparently that's decided to bugger off. So this is his full-on, like, full art. And one of the things that I think
I'm just looking at, like, the tiny bit that's making it onto the screen.
Because the dog is not visible at all, because the dog is weird.
Just, there's the ear.
Yeah. So, I think we talked about this a little bit earlier when we were just looking at the smaller card art, that we were unable to decide if this is a very feminine man, or if this is a woman who just happens to be, like, the blacksmith. And I like how they're very nonchalant about either one of those. It's just, so nicely done.
Like, gender fluidity, yo.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a head.
What? Oh, yeah, hey, puppy head. He's special. So I think some of the things that we really liked about this were, first of all, because this is a red and a white card, there's beautiful use of the duality of the lighting here.
Yep.
Especially when you think about the fact that these are supposed to be the enemy colors. You've got
My pillow.
You are not helping.
Sorry.
Stop talking He's to the worst. Dog. So there's a nice, like, very distinct split where she is actually the active border between the red, like, passionate, burning fire. And then
as light source A.
And then this intricate, very, I don't want to say sterile, but very pure, almost, light coming through this beautifully designed window, as opposed to the chaos that is the fire in the corner.
It's like a very quintessential light, maybe?
Yeah. And then he or she is sort of this focal point between them. And then I like how
the way the shadows and lighting are interacting on her face.
And just something about the way that you're sort of drawn. Okay, so one of the things about the way that art, especially when you're looking at something that's actually in the this sort of format, as opposed to the very tiny card art, is that there's this idea of crash points, where you're supposed to draw two vertical and two horizontal lines, basically splitting the picture into three columns and three rows.
Yep.
And each one of those crash points are places where your eyes are naturally drawn to, like places where the lines intersect with each other. And the idea is that you have one crash point that then you follow the line, one of the lines it's attached to, down to the next one and sort of move around the picture like that. If you ever look at the original poster for Breakfast at Tiffany's, it's a beautiful, like, design of that, because basically the the first crash point you notice is, like, right at her shoulder. Then it follows down the length of her body back up and sort of, like, connects up with the, she's holding, like, one of the elongated cigarettes, and it just brings you back up to it. It's very well done.
Right.
But you have that here where the big crash points are either, like, the pure white light in the background, the chaotic red fire, or arguably her face in the hammer. But then it draws you to her body, which then draws you down her arm to the, I can never remember the name of the thing she's holding with the tongs.
I should know this as well.
That is holding the molten metal that will become this weapon. I believe it's a blade. Looks like a blade that she's making.
Exactly, yeah.
And it's just this, the fact that that's in the center, it's connected to her, it's this sort of blend of the chaotic fire in the corner and the pure ordered light on the left. It's just so well done. And I'm going to, I can't jump back to the chat right now because it's focused on this. So if I jump back to the chat will appear there. So do we have anything else, or can I jump back to the, like, card pictures?
It's pretty. It's so very good. It's, you can't.
And for anyone who's played in the conspiracy set, there's a creature with Defender, and there are also tokens that look just like the sort of those almost helmet-like things that she's got in the background. There are creatures that have those for heads.
Right.
And it just looks so beautiful, and I like that they tied it in together. Let's jump back here. It's going to be derpy, because it does this. I might actually have to change scenes again, because
I believe it.
We're using OBS, and sometimes OBS is weird. Hang on.
We can
revive. Oh god, it's gonna be silly, isn't it?
Apparently
it is. Where's my mouse?
On the second there.
Three monitors is a problem sometimes. There's that. There we go.
Yay.
You are a pain in the butt sometimes, OBS. Then I lost.
Should
my mouse
I name
again.
This OBS?
Oh, Sir Frijoles. Now I can sort of read over and see it. Says he believes it's a crucible, and that's entirely possible. But I thought crucible was like a. Oh no, I always get crucible confused with fulcrum, because I don't know.
Huh.
So, what is it? Up next is one from M15 that sadly I never got to play with, but it's actually a really cool card.
Mm-hmm. Your turn.
Oh, it is my turn? Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, here, then you can have one of these pumpkin pie pop-tarts.
Hooray!
So, Generator Servant. So, for one and one colorless and a rend, red.
What is this?
I don't know! So, we found pumpkin pie pop-tarts at, well, I found them at the store like 2 hours ago. And just needed to buy them.
Important tangent, by the way.
They're not bad, they're just weird. So, Generator Servant for one colorless and a red. It's a creature elemental from M15. He's common. He's
Did
a 2/1.
I need to throw out my oatmeal. Sorry.
2/1 with tap, sacrifice Generator Servant. Add 2 colorless to your mana pool. If that mana is spent on a creature spell, it gains haste until end of turn. I like it. Oh, I thought
the
you were like handing, I thought you were handing the Pop-Tart back. I was like, oh, was
I'm
it
just resting on my knee.
Okay.
I don't know how to feel.
Understand how he is connected to a generator right now, besides the fact that he is literally made out of lightning.
Mm-hmm.
It looks more like he's standing around a cannon, but I can sort of get the idea of him, because he's like an elemental made out of electricity, so clearly he must be connected with power production somehow.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the fact that he is actually made out of electricity.
Yeah,
it is
that
a little
he
bit
sort
weird
of
that,
makes him a light source.
It is a little bit weird that he produces colorless mana from that, but
at the same time,
producing two red would probably be a little bit too good.
I don't know. I don't associate electricity generator things with, like, a particular element, really.
True. It's just because he's red and because he is actually red. Like, not just because his color is red, because the character is red. I tend to go, well, shouldn't he make red? But you're right, because, I mean, we've seen things like the Thran Dynamo that is a generator that just makes colorless mana. So I can definitely appreciate it, and I do like the idea that it's basically
like I feel
he produces the mana and he's done. It's like that's all he's got.
Like the idea of like a mana generator to me seems very red, but in order to make a specific colored mana would just be like way OP, and just like in terms of like actually doing it, it seems like it'd be very very hard to do that and to just create colorless mana.
Yeah,
sort of. It works for me.
So I think we're going to skip over a couple of these just because they don't look super interesting. We're skipping over, in case you're wondering, Hover Barrier and Illusionary Armor. Illusionary Armor looks cool, but there's just not much to say about it. And moving on to one of the new cards that he did for Khans of Tarkir. Close, you cursed little buggers. I've got too many
is
windows
Is it Jeskai Karm? Is that what was, or Jeskai?
I think we were going with Jeskai.
Okay. Because it uses an eye.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I believe it's your turn.
Yes, but I'm cleaning pumpkin pie Pop-Tart out of my mouth. So
I'm going to eat one.
So Jeskai Charm, obviously. It's Jeskai mana, blue, red, white, uncommon instant from Khans of Tarkir. Choose one. Put target creature on top of its owner's library, or Jeskai Charm deals 4 damage to target opponent, or creatures you control get +1/+1 and gain lifelink until end of turn.
I forgot that said creatures.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was, like, that one.
Mm-hmm. I like the lotus blossoms. And it's very Jeskai. Kai. I just asked this question, and it's already in one ear out the other. And so that's very clearly like in like a Buddhist-y lotus temple, and like a, you know.
And we've seen a lot of nice sort of lotus imagery with the Jeskai.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, I don't want to say peaceful, but I think it sort of is.
Mm-hmm.
It works with the idea of the Jeskai.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we had one card that was, the Someone of the Inner Eye, who is the djinn, who his flavor text was about the one petal cannot claim the beauty of the lotus.
Right.
And I just like this motif that they have running through it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about the perspective here
where
it's that sort of almost like a fisheye. Yeah. Where it's this wide-angle lens.
And it plays off of the eye idea, I think. And, okay.
Because it's this idea of taking in a lot more information than the normal human eye would be able to do with this perspective. Uh-huh. Like, normal human eye perspective would probably just be the sort of fire in the center.
Mm-hmm.
You probably wouldn't get the doorways or the sort of curtains hanging on the side.
Yeah.
But as it's the sort of idea of the enlightenment and the awakening that the Jeskai mm-hmm. are supposed to be
focused
on.
Changes your paradigm.
Yeah, is that they're taking in this whole new perspective that...
I'm quoting in The Lion King, look beyond what you see.
Yeah. It's these people who have surpassed what normal people sort of experience. It's the mm-hmm. idea of, like, spiritual enlightenment, and it's a reflect on how you experience mm-hmm. the actual physical world.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's quite well done.
Yeah, just very, you know, obvious, simple, you know, artsy thing that was done really well is the use of red next to the, you know, blue-green instead of the complementary colors.
Yeah, and I like that, because there's no green in this card's color, that it's a much more subdued green, and that it sort of blends into the blue of, like, the water
mm-hmm. yep.
and the sort of, like, natural flow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, up next,
mm-hmm.
we have Silliness with Kiora's Dismissal.
mm-hmm.
So, this is a weird one.
Mm-hmm.
And before I go into the card, my only problem with this is solely the representation of Kiora.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have a full art card for her,
mm-hmm.
where, let's face it, she actually looks pretty good, and this does not really look the way that she does.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll probably bring her up, actually, on her own in just a second.
Mm-hmm.
But Kiora's Dismissal for one blue is an instant uncommon from Journey into Nyx with the Strive mechanic. Kiora's Dismissal costs an extra blue more to more to cast for each target creature beyond the first.
Mm-hmm.
Return any number of target enchantments to their owner's hands.
Mm-hmm.
So, now, kind of, but until Theros really rotates out because there were the enchantment creatures, it's not that bad.
Yep.
But it's a weird card to begin with, so let me just... Oh, wait, I don't have my keyboard. My keyboard.
I believe in you.
Hang on one second here.
I believe. I really don't know how I feel about those pumpkin Pop-Tarts.
I like them, so... I guess that would be Kiora the Crashing Wave.
The filling isn't like pumpkin pie, it's like pumpkin pie jelly.
Yeah,
and I don't know how to... I can't.
So, this is my problem here, is that card was a lot of those sort of pink and purple themes that
mm-hmm.
a lot of artists won't work with, but that we've seen Matthias does use. Mm-hmm. But those aren't themes that we've seen with Kiora, and this is art that's been around for a while.
Right.
Because this came out with, I want to say, Duels of the Planeswalkers 2012.
Mm-hmm.
2012 or 2013.
Uh-huh.
But it has been out, yeah, it has been 2012 because we had to wait at least a year to get a card for her.
Sorry, I'm very fidgety.
I understand. And she's a really good card. The problem is just that I don't think mm-hmm. Kiora's Dismissal really works with her because she's also not a super... Well, she's very control-y, but not in the same way that mm-hmm. it's like bounce things. It's very much... I'm going to slow you down while I speed up and do big, horrifying things with big creatures. Mm-hmm. So, not my favorite ever.
Mm-hmm.
However, here we've got another one of the...
Charms!
Okay. Yes, that was the word I'm looking for.
Was the word?
What?
What are we?
No. Okay. Charm. Charm okay. was the word I was looking for.
Okay. yeah, is it...
I think it's your turn, because okay, there's a thing in between.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so yeah. Mardu Charm, Mardu Mana, red, white, black, uncommon instant, choose one. Mardu Charm deals 4 damage to target creature, or put 2/1/1 white warrior creature tokens onto the battlefield. They gain first strike until end of turn. Target opponent reveals his or her hand. You choose non-creature, non-land card from it. That player discards that card.
I think some of those are a little bit wordy, mm-hmm. but besides that, I think this is actually quite a good card.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy the art, honestly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I like the idea that, as opposed to a lot of the other ones where they're sort of, like, the Abzan sort of build up their bonfire mm-hmm. in this very impressive way, or that the Jeskai have it as sort
an
of
an eternal flame.
Yeah, an eternal flame that's sort of, like, stationary in mm-hmm. one of their monasteries.
Yeah.
This one looks like, while there was definitely care taken in its building,
mm-hmm.
it's something that they can just, like, it's there to be there temporarily.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, erected with bones that are... I would honestly probably guess that they'd be from some of the, like, Obzon's elephants that they probably took down.
Right.
Yeah. And just sort of erected this quick bonfire as sort of a celebration of a victory.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the purest representation of what this clan does.
Yeah.
Is they fight. Even their mechanic is based around doing nothing but combat.
Yeah.
It's such a beautiful use of it.
Mm-hmm. And then in the background, the, you know, like rocky, you know, jaggedy cliffs and stuff, yeah, are reminiscent of the Mardu wing,
yeah,
motif. And
It's a lot of the sharp angles that, mm-hmm, the Mardu seem to have in a lot of the aspects of their art and their society.
Yep.
It's really well done. And again, because it's freaking Matthias, it's beautiful fire.
Yeah.
Are you noticing a theme that despite the fact that half of these don't actually have any connection with fire, mm-hmm, they still found an excuse, like, Matthias, throw some fire in there somehow, because,
uh-huh,
you do it pretty.
Yeah.
Because there's that beautiful light where you have sort of the innermost light in between, like, at the very center,
mm-hmm,
where it's the brightest, and then as it spreads out, it gets darker, which is something that's so hard to do.
Yeah.
And then there's that sort of ring farther out,
mm-hmm,
in the back where that's sort of another, mm-hmm, mark of the wings sort of blazing out in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's just so nice. So,
yeah,
pretty.
Mm-hmm.
Come here, gather silliness. Up next is Marked for Death, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Or Mark for Death.
Mm-hmm.
So this is another art that we'll get to see again later, because he's got this up on his DeviantArt.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's full beautiful glory.
Mm-hmm.
So for 3 colorless and a red, it's a sorcery from... an uncommon sorcery from Gatecrash. Target creature an opponent controls blocks this turn if able. Untap that creature. Other creatures that player controls can't block this turn.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone roots for the little guy, but nobody bets on him.
Nice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this is sort of the idea of it's two folks in the Rakdos, like, fighting pits.
Yeah.
In theory, like, the big guy is definitely... You are way too close to that mic cable, you silly little dog. I think the big guy is definitely, like, a Rakdos gladiator.
Mm-hmm.
The smaller, yeah, guy could almost be, like, an Azorius agent or a... Boros, like, soldier slash sort of cop,
mm-hmm,
depending on how you're looking at them.
Uh-huh.
Like, a lot of the descriptions are sort of, Boros tend to be something between military and cops,
mm-hmm,
and Azorius go from, like, from, like, hello, dog, prosecutors
to... He wants to be in the frame for once.
To like, the feds, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that with some of their other cards, but not so much with this one. So this is one that has very silly art.
You are a sad, strange little man.
Come here. Yeah, there we go. Like, I don't know why, but there's something about this guy's face.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another one where he's got a bigger version on his DeviantArt.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll really see, there's just something weird about this guy's face.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of like the idea of this, because it's,
mm-hmm,
it's misdirection. Actually, do you want to read this one? Because
I think I
read the last one.
3 colorless, 2 blue, rare instant. You may exile a blue card from your hand rather than pay Misdirection's mana cost. Change the target of target spell with a single target. So, lots of
I don't
targets.
Remember if this is a reprint, but basically, even if it's not, it's a callback to...
Mm-hmm.
I've already forgotten its name.
Mm-hmm. I believe in you.
The Force of Will.
Uh-huh.
Which is the horrible counterspell that's used in Vintage all the freaking time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just looking up this card to see if it's a reprint.
Mm-hmm.
Misdirection. I can type.
Mm-hmm.
No, I can't, because I spelled it without an O. There we go. Okay, yeah, so this is a reprint from Mercadian Masks. I was like,
okay.
I know that's part of Masks block, but I don't remember which part.
Okay.
And I just like the idea that he's just... Someone shot lightning at him, and he's just like, nope.
Mm-hmm.
Slap it aside and accidentally electrocute the armored thing behind him.
Uh-huh.
Poor guy.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so we've got, like, two of my favorite art coming up here.
Cool.
So first of all, the Nemesis of Mortals.
Yep. Pointy.
Sorry, I'm trying to read our chat real quick.
Uh-huh.
Is there a ton of lore for Magic the Gathering beyond what is on the cards? I would assume so, because you seem to know a lot of background information,
mm-hmm,
but Magic has been around for a while, so maybe I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So Magic is weird. As of right now, every set sort of has its own story,
mm-hmm.
and
right.
they'll yeah. try to portray as much of that through the cards as they can, but they tend to also have articles mm-hmm. called Uncharted Realms, which I think are every Wednesday, that sort of flesh out extra stories. They used to print books with every set.
Mm-hmm.
Back when it was originally... for the first 10-ish years of Magic's existence, mm-hmm. it was sort of one flowing story that stayed on one plane and followed a couple of very specific people in a ever-growing cast.
What are you doing?
But after about, I want to say, 2005-ish, they started to move towards this idea of every year we have a set, which is usually... a block, which is three sets of cards and has an overarching story,
mm-hmm.
And has very different themes. Yep. So last year we did Theros, which was very Greek-themed. It was the idea yeah. of all of these different Greek gods and things like that,
mm-hmm.
and people, some people opposing the gods, some people trying to become gods.
People being used very loosely.
Yeah.
Some people working
for the gods, some people getting betrayed by the gods, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now we are moving into a set called Khans of Tarkir, which is...
sort of Asianic, sort of.
It's sort of general Asianic. It's a lot of... there are five different groups. Each one of them is based on a different classic
culture.
Asian and sort of, in a little bit, Middle Eastern culture.
Mm-hmm.
It's a world that has... that. Where dragons are dead and all of these different clans have basically...
Sweetie, I need you not to do that.
...taken on some aspect of the dragon to represent themselves. And we already know that part of their big overarching story is going to be that one set they're going to go back in time and
mm-hmm.
do something to stop all the dragons from being dead. And then the third set everyone is expecting to basically be what the world would be like if these dragons hadn't been wiped out several thousand years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We've had... Innistrad, which was the...
Yeah, it's the one that I think like we first really got into.
Yeah. Innistrad, which was a big flavorfully... which was a set where they had a lot of story in it.
Mm-hmm.
It was sort of a very gothic world with all of these classic horror monsters.
Mm-hmm.
And
werewolves, which is cool because they were the flipping cards.
And we came into this world that used to have a literal guardian angel
mm-hmm.
who had become sealed away. So the first set was sort of introduce you to... all of the weird things here, the people who are making Frankenstein's monster, the
mm-hmm.
people who are making zombies, the ghosts of people who die that can't leave the world.
Yeah.
Then the second set was everything's getting worse and worse, oh god, what are we gonna do?
Mm-hmm.
And then the third set was the guardian angel has been, like, released, and her attempts to sort of help purify the world and get
mm-hmm.
it back to normal. Before that, what did we have? We had Zendikar. Not
mm-hmm.
Zendikar. Scars of Mirrodin.
Right.
So it was like a metal planet and all of these people who... It was like a... It was a return to an old set, so it was...
Uh-huh. Right.
All the people who were on this planet were like orphans because all of their parents were from different planes and things had been snatched there.
Mm-hmm.
And in the first set, when the heroes succeeded, they destroyed these things and all of the people
here?
Who... were from all these other planets basically got zapped home, leaving all of their kids behind because they were actually from here.
Good.
So we came back to this planet a couple generations later to see like how all of these orphans and things had adapted. And as it moved forward, we were dealing with, was it the Phyrexians, who were an old enemy from like 20, actually probably about 15 years ago in Magic,
mm-hmm.
who had been killed, and the guy who made this planet basically accidentally brought them to it. So they had this running thing of will Mirrodin, which was the actual planet, survive, or will it become a new Phyrexia?
Mm-hmm.
And it was the first set was 80% Mirrodin and this tiny little 20% Phyrexian, and then the second set was 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
And then they ran this promotion about will the final one be Mirrodin pure or new Phyrexia?
Mm-hmm.
And it was new Phyrexia because the Phyrexians won. So there's basically as much story as you want to get out of Magic.
Uh-huh.
Or
you can't
dog.
Just have it be cards that you use to whip people's butts.
Yeah, like if you really don't need to look at it, but a lot of it can be. especially
which is what we appreciate doing.
That's entirely what we're focused on, is to look at the flavor of these cards, to look at the story behind them.
Mm-hmm.
We had a
the inspiration. Where yeah, we had a ball going with it.
We had a really great time with Theros because there were a lot of trying to figure out where they were trying to draw this inspiration from.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was the Vulpine Goliath, which is just mm-hmm. a weird card because it's just a giant fox with trample for no apparent reason. But there's a very obscure Greek story.
That's my nose.
About a fox that was created by, I want to say, Artemis. I want to say it was Artemis. I'm probably wrong. Who was destined to never be caught. So
right.
he was tormenting he just kept eating things and getting bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And he was tormenting all these people. So Zeus sent, I think it was Zeus, sent his hound, who was unstoppable.
Uh-huh.
And it was just this idea that eventually this giant fox was eventually caught by a hound from another deity.
Mm-hmm.
And for people who have never heard that story, which I hadn't before the set
right.
came out.
I'm vaguely familiar.
It's just like it's a giant fox for no apparent reason. Cool. Mm-hmm. But if you hear that story, you mm-hmm. get that little bit more information about why it's cool, and that's sort of what we try to do.
Yeah, and then there's, the story of Oedipus and stuff, and his men turning into pigs.
Yeah.
And stuff. And
not Oedipus.
Not Oedipus. Odysseus. Sorry, wrong O.
There's also a card who, oh god, I can't remember his name, but it's like something Seeker, who is he's like a flying guy for one who's supposed to be Icarus, basically,
mm-hmm.
where
right.
he's got haste. So he has to, no matter what, he has to attack every turn
mm-hmm.
until eventually he gets too close to the sun and his wings melt and he dies.
Yeah.
So here we've actually got one of the really popular cards that, frankly, started a standard deck
mm-hmm.
that was legitimate and actually was played in a lot of things, which is Nemesis of...
Goodness.
Nemesis of Mortals.
Hi. I know you don't understand the word calm. It's not in your vocabulary, but just channel that.
So Nemesis of Mortals is a card that was heavily played in Limited and even got used a lot in the, like, red-green Monsters deck, which is still sort of around. A little bit less so, but it's still around.
Mm-hmm.
So for four colorless and two green, it's a creature snake uncommon. It's a 5/5. Nemesis of Mortals costs one less to cast for each creature card in your graveyard. And for seven colorless and two green, it has a monstrosity of 5.
Mm-hmm.
Also, that ability costs one less to activate for each creature in your graveyard.
Nice.
So basically, if you can pay his monstrosity cost, he gets 5 +1/+1 counters, mm-hmm. making him a 10/10. He's very scary.
Mm-hmm.
His art is also freaking beautiful.
Yeah.
Horrifying, but beautiful. Because we've got another one of the things where pink...
Uh-huh.
No one uses pink
uh-huh.
anymore.
And especially pink juxtaposed with a green makes for a really creepy set.
Especially
really
when it's not
there.
It's not sort of a natural green, it's that dark, deep green
uh-huh.
that
the
doesn't
primordial,
even,
like, slimy
yeah,
ooze.
It's that sort of green where it doesn't say, I'm hiding, it says, get away from me, you will die.
Yeah.
Like,
don't touch this.
Yeah, like, this is a creature...
Follow up to MC Hammer's song.
Just from the colors, you can tell that this is a creature who does not hide and sneak up and ambush.
Yeah.
This is a creature that goes out and hunts.
Mm-hmm.
And it hunts people. Like, from the clothing of these people, we know that they're from...
Cetessa?
No,
or
not
no.
Cetessa.
Mel...
It's Melito... No.
It's Melitus?
I think it is Melitus.
Okay. Something approximately like
yeah.
that.
Which is...
Oh, God.
The
brightness.
Which is city that was big on, like, defending itself. The only way to get to it was almost entirely by sea.
Uh-huh.
Like,
it's very
you could get to it, but
inspired.
you had to hunt through like mountains to get actually get to the
mm-hmm.
other entrance of it.
Right.
And it was this very, like, big prosperous city.
Mm-hmm.
This was the city where they had philosophers, like, as the ruling people. It was supposed to be the
yeah.
intelligent city, the city that didn't deal with these kind of things all that often.
Uh-huh.
Because
it looks
they
much
didn't
more like
have
a Cetessan creature.
Yeah, so this is a creature that's so powerful that it's just able to get into their city without any trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the city that is supposed to be the most civilized, the most, like, perfect example of civilization.
Uh-huh.
Thanks, that's a lot of info. I didn't mean to send y'all on a tangent, but I'm off. You can color me a follower. Sweet.
Cool. Cool.
We have no problem with that at all.
You have a good day, evening, night as well, wherever you are.
You also have a very awesome name. I wish I had come up with a name like... I always get sad whenever I see really good Twitch names, because it makes me feel bad for having something so simple.
Mm. Yeah, I just wish I had one I could use consistently across things, and kind of wish I could go back and redo my, Mojang one.
Yeah.
Into one that I think I'm using more consistently now.
Well,
anyway.
I think Nemesis Immortals is just really well done, and I believe there's a bigger art version of it too that
angle.
And we'll see that I believe it has more than like one eye as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's got it's not just the one eye on this side. I think it's a couple of different ones, and they're not very, shall we say, aesthetically pleasing, because they don't seem to be very coordinated.
Uh-huh.
In just this horribly creepy way.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So this is my other freaking favorite.
Uh-huh. And I get this one, right?
Yes, you do.
Orokos Sun Guide. One colorless, one white. Creature cat monk, who's a 2/2, has inspired. Whenever Orokos Sun Guide becomes untapped, you gain 2 life. Orokos? Yeah. I can't read.
Yeah.
Even with my glasses, I'm useless. Let the humans have their pantheon. We have we need no gods to thrive. Even mortals such as I can capture a part of the sun's power.
And I want to see if we can get the other... Like, the big on full art for this. Come on, where are you? I know you're here somewhere. You're so pretty. There we go.
Yeah.
Come here, mouse.
Yeah, that one looks better. But true.
Yeah. I'm just trying to find the mouse, because it's missing... There it is.
Yay!
There you are, you little monster. Just, like...
Yeah,
I'm going to have to move it to the front real quick. Hang on. Order. Move up. There we go. We're not that important to see. It's important to see.
Or your elbow isn't.
Yeah. Oh, God. I mean, look at this.
Scooch in.
But look at this. I mean, when you look at his full art version, you can see all of the beautiful ways that he's interpreting the fact that this is someone using magic based around the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like he's trying to contain all of his power just in his hand.
Mm-hmm.
But you can see that instead of eyes, he has these gleaming, like, brilliant single spots of light.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I want to say, like, for me, the focus is almost on, you know, the amber plains, you know, all the wheat, or, you know, rye or barley, whatever it is, the grain in front of him and stuff, which is, you know, interpretation of, you know, sun's energy as
it's sort of a physical representation of it
and stuff, and how it has the golden color, and it's the detail on it is incredible.
It really is. And I this is one of my only problems, is that you miss so much when you're only getting to see it on that little card frame. And when you get to see this full beautiful version that he did,
1.5 square inches.
I mean, look at that. You can see the individual, you can almost see individual hairs sort of blowing in the wind on his mane.
Yeah, you can, you know, make detail out of, like, his ribs and his muscles. And
I somehow I never noticed this when we were looking at the little card. He's, another way that his magic is sort of manifesting itself is these sort of, like, 3 small golden feathers just from his left arm. It's just so beautiful and well done.
Yeah.
And
that cloud. Cloud's like my favorite. It's like one of the only things I take pictures of on my road trip coming out here and stuff. Just basically everything's pictures of clouds.
It's just so well done. And I really, for some reason, I really like the sort of juxtaposition, I can't talk, sorry, of the red tassels just against his almost pure white fur.
Mm-hmm.
It just really makes them strike out, especially when you see these sort of, like, the gold for the few pieces of jewelry or armor he's wearing.
Mm-hmm.
And there are little uses of purple. Like, there are little gems on sort of his belt.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, purple and gold is one of, like, my favorite combinations.
And there's almost sort of a purple in the hand that's sort of trying to control the magic.
Mm-hmm.
Where...
Yeah, the way the shadow is purple.
Yeah, because it's not even really a shadow. It's just the fact that... it's the idea that everything else is so bright, and there's just this one part that isn't quite the same light.
Yeah.
So there has to
because
be...
Because light is what...
Yeah.
Ugh.
So there has to be sort of a negative effect, even though there's brightness everywhere. The light is what casts the shadows.
Come here.
It's so beautiful. And I like
Don't
his
you
staff.
Don't chew on my pillow. What's wrong with you?
Like, you can't really see his staff in the art either. Mm-hmm. How it's got this almost, like, a thorn at the base.
There you go. Come here.
He's not going to help you with that at all.
Oh, sometimes he does.
Okay, and where's my mouse again?
I have pictures of him falling asleep, like, in the crook of my elbow and on my stomach.
Yeah, the problem is he's weird.
Yep, that is the problem.
Come on, mouse. I know you're here somewhere.
There.
I just have to watch it at this point, or else it gets lost somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I love it when it works correctly. Now then. So, Resco's sun
guide.
Do you
have anything to say on the subject? Nope.
No, not really anything else.
I was asking him.
Oh, well, he never has anything to say. He's quiet
unless
and nice.
Unless someone knocks on the door.
Yeah, that doesn't count.
Mm-hmm.
This sliver.
So creepy.
Yeah. Do you want to... Oh, wait, you read the sun guide, didn't you?
Yeah.
So, predatory sliver. For one colorless and a green, creature sliver from M14. It's common. Sliver creatures you control get +1/+1. It's also a 1/1 itself, which means it comes down as a 2/2. No matter how much the slivers change, their collective might remains.
Yeah.
Like, I'm still not a huge fan of the change to the slivers.
Mm-hmm.
But this is still, like...
In, like, their design, you mean?
This is creepy. Yeah. Like, they used to be the sort of insectoid, almost reptile thing without these...
More...
So, in M14, they became very humanoid.
Mm-hmm.
And then they did a sort of step back with the couple that they printed in M15.
Mm-hmm.
But I miss their old sort of insectoid design.
Agreed.
I appreciate... Yeah.
Kind of translate better to, like, the hive mindset and why all the
I appreciate that they have to evolve, they have to change, and a lot of things have done that in Magic and done it very well. I just don't particularly love this one change.
Yeah, but in terms of the predatory sliver, it works very well.
Yes, because you have this very predatory face. There's just something about the way that it's almost humanoid, but then the way that it connects is wrong. Like, it feels like it connects at the back of the head instead of...
Like a crown, almost.
Yeah. No, no, I'm even talking about the way that the neck connects to the head.
Uh-huh.
It's just the way that it's holding its head
feels
like instead of this being a natural position, that it's almost like the neck is connecting near the back of the head.
It's so creepy and disturbing.
Yeah. And that is something I would believe is definitely a threat. Horrifying.
The way it really looks like this thing is looking through the card art and is plotting how to kill you.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, so here's another one that's quite good. What do you want to guess? It involves fire. So
who'd have thunk?
Yeah. Oh, I
Kelsa
did the last one.
All right. So, sorry. Itchy nose.
No, don't worry.
Rage of Purphoros, 4 colorless, 1 red. Sorcery. Rage of Purphoros deals 4 damage to the target creature. It can't be regenerated this turn. Scry 1. Just look at the top of your library. You may put that card in the bottom of your library. And, yeah. Just that fire, yo. And the way... Yeah, there's so much action in how blurry the background is.
It's a really nice use of movement
for
a stationary image.
It really feels like that, you know, fire or magma spew, whatever that is moving.
Yeah. And just, it feels like it is actively propelling this Leonin backwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you can almost, like, feel your hand as if you were the one who had, like, dropped the crook staff he has.
And I'm just... The first time I saw this was just that wonder of, like, did he get hit with this? Is he trying to jump out of the way of this?
Mm-hmm.
It's just so nicely done.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good.
Yeah, I love the idea that it feels like it's just coming out of the earth. It's Purphoros' rage, not someone channeling Purphoros.
Yeah. So we've got 2 more to do, and they're both charms.
Mm-hmm.
We're skipping over a couple more, but some of them we'll actually get to see later.
Yep.
So, Sultai Charm. For a Sultai, which is a black, green, and a blue. I don't know where I got 4. It is an uncommon instant from Khans of Tarkir. Choose 1. Destroy target monocolored creature. Destroy target artifact or enchantment.
Mm-hmm.
Draw 2 cards, then discard a card. And this is the only one of them that has flavor text. Strike the fumes hiss. Raise an empire with your ambition.
Mm-hmm.
I almost said an ambition with your empire, but really nice again.
That's a much more abstract concept. Yeah. Raise ambition with your empire.
But this is such a, like, nice, very basic description of the Sultai with just this one piece of art.
Yeah.
Because, like the Obzon and like the Jeskai, they're stationary. Mm-hmm. However, unlike them, they have built up these massive, like, fortresses where this is where they live, and these are incredibly decadent areas. Mm-hmm. And you can see that with Lavish. This. Like, the fire itself is fairly simple, but then you look down at the thing holding it,
mm-hmm.
and you've got, just from what little we can see, it looks like there's some kind of, like, treated metal that almost looks like scales.
Mm-hmm.
There's these sort of teeth, almost emulating the Naga who rule the Sultai, or maybe emulating, like, the crocodiles that they use for horrible, horrible things.
Yeah, and the fire is more yellowy gold based, as opposed to, you know, the fiery, the ready orange and stuff, and, you know, the gold translates.
And the fang is a little bit more subtle than a lot of the other art ones that you've seen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can still definitely see the fang there,
but it's less of the focus.
Yeah, it blends in more with the rest of the fire itself.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I like how the fire is sort of revealing little bits of the area that it's in,
mm-hmm.
and that way.
To me, it also feels like the Sultai are more mysterious and stuff, and so it's closer and just on the fire, not as much on what's around it.
Yeah, it's only revealing a little bit. It's that idea that while fire is a light source, it is not a good light source, really.
Mm-hmm.
If you've ever, tried to use a candle to light something up, it doesn't do that much.
Yeah.
And even when you've got this sort of big bonfire, it's still fairly focused in a significant area.
Uh-huh.
And I do like that it's still sort of reflecting off some of the metal in the background, or stone, whatever that is, that is sort of this green material.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly, we have the Temur charm.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just checking. Rhymes with chatting Temur. In real quick. Do you want to take this one?
Okay. Temur charm is a Temur. Green, blue, red. Uncommon instant with choose one. Target creature you control gets +1/+1 until end of turn. It fights target creature you don't control. Counter target spell unless its controller pays 3. Or creatures with power 3 or less can't block this turn.
I like that, since their theme is creatures 4 or bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think this one's really well done,
mm-hmm.
because I think this explains a lot of the Temur things,
mm-hmm.
because you have this single person with this one bonfire.
Yeah, like, you know, he's doing a ritual to, you know, communicate with his ancestors, as is very important to the Temur.
Yeah, I was going to say that's sort of the thing that Temur does. They do these big, elaborate rituals that are usually one person doing it alone, because they need to communicate with their ancestors. They need to go into this spiritual vision for themselves.
Yeah. Because everyone all together would just cloud the Ouija board.
Yeah,
because
while
lines.
They are definitely a united clan, they work together, they work very well with nature, it's still this idea that they have to work for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They have to...
Yeah.
And especially the shaman tend to sort of go through these experiences on their own, then share it with the rest of the clan, or share it with other shaman, and sort of try to coordinate with what they all saw and how that works together.
And it's cool because, you know, you have the, you know, a little bit of the aurora and stuff right above the fire, which really kind of harkens to that, you know,
Seeing ritual. Something there that I didn't see before, though.
Hmm?
So, in the aurora, hang on, let me see if I can find the mouse.
Uh-huh.
Right there.
Right, yeah.
That almost looks like it's...
Sort of like a dragon spiraling around.
Yeah, I wasn't even going to say that. We've seen these sort of pictures of what was sort of Ugin's body.
Mm-hmm.
The big colorless dragon who was also a planeswalker and helped lock up the Eldrazi. And he has this very slender, almost rounded head, in the same way that Nicol Bolas has the very, very slender build. But Nicol Bolas has the very sharp angles.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen that Ugin seems to be a little bit more rounded.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm... It almost looks like that's the head we've seen of Ugin before.
Okay, cool. And then it looks like it sort of spirals around and transforms into the aurora.
Or I was even thinking, like, we've seen that that Ugin seemed to have the similar sort of horn style to Nicol Bolas, where he has the weird, giant sort of... I can't really describe the shape, but you know what I mean, right?
Yeah, like the...
Yeah.
Hit all the things.
Hit the pop filter.
Yes.
That Ugin seems to have a similarly designed head to that.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I'm remembering now that I saw it in... It's the art for Fate Reforged, if I can pull this up real quick.
Mm-hmm. I didn't tweet, and I just remembered. I'm sorry.
Figure forged.
What's my hair doing?
There's really horrible art. Yeah. Ah. So it almost looks like that. Now, there's a 50-50 chance that if I jump over to this page, it will actually work, but I said 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if I keep scrolling over too far. See, it almost looks like this sort of head that is implied to either be Ugin or Nicol Bolas.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's just what I'm getting out of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just going to debate that. It might not be right, but I'm going to debate it.
Right, right?
Aha. So, with that, I believe we are going to be moving on to...
Diddy.
His really awesome DeviantArt page where he's actually got almost everything he's ever done.
Creepy.
So this is...
really cool and really, really good, but creepy.
I believe Colorosa has got this up on his DeviantArt page saying that this was MTG judge promo art that never got a card assigned.
Huh.
It was basically they gave him what they normally do is, here is what, like a description of the art that we were looking for.
Right.
Can you do something for that? And then... it'll get attached to a card. So what I'm getting here is something related to Golgari.
Because,
I mean, you've got the insects and the sort of ritualistic shaman guy.
It's so creepy.
Who is being feasted on by insects. Oh, God, it's so horribly disturbing, but so well done.
Yep. In a nutshell, that's this card.
Yeah. Hang on, let me scroll down a little bit to... this used to be perfectly sized, and apparently it's not anymore. I had it set up such that it should have worked, but oh well. I can't tell if the thing on his left arm, like where you see that sort of bone ridge, if that's another insect like the one on his right arm, or if that is actually something that's sort of attached to his hand. Yeah.
Maybe I mean, that's the thing, is that they... like, I don't know. Like,
they're
clamp
symbiotes.
On. Yeah.
Yeah.
And stuff. And that's, like, the next phase of their... that's, like, their chrysalis stage or whatever.
So it's...
I don't know.
I mean, that would kind of make sense with the sort of shoulder-ish things he's got, which clearly appear to be biological.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not attached in any logical spacing.
Mm-hmm.
It's entirely
but
possible.
But then the one on his
actually...
head, you know, seems like it's, you know, sort of like the next stage. It's bigger and, like...
and I'm actually thinking that the one on his shoulders might actually be one thing.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's just sort of curled around them.
Uh-huh. Ugh.
He does not seem in any way dissuaded by this, though. Yeah. Beautiful. Really creepy.
Yes.
Really, really creepy.
Mm-hmm.
So up next we've got... okay, look at that face! What the heck is the face he's making? It's just like...
it's a bit derp.
He's just like, yeah. I'm now starting to think that he's not misdirecting the spell.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting the feeling that he's just like, you, I'm going to zap. And someone else is just going like, no.
I kind of like the idea that, you know, like, when taking, like, if you were able to pause a moment in time to, like, get these scenes that we see on the cards... there would be a lot more dirt faces, like when you pause a movie or something. And I kind of like the idea that that's
all
what
I'm thinking
the
now is one of those
here.
One of those really long posts of like the one frame in a Disney movie where someone finds where they're doing something stupid. And all I'm thinking is one that I recently saw that was just like, the first person was just like, "I'm going to Disney World," and after that, it was just like all of these different Disney characters with horrified faces or like horribly screwed up faces, screaming about Disney World.
Disney World,
like, oh.
Disneyland.
But still, I really like this.
Yeah, definitely.
So this horrifying monstrosity, which doesn't quite fit. This is actually a commissioned piece that someone asked him to do. I'm already forgetting the name. GP Vienna. This GP Vienna, not like the one last year that a bunch of people got kicked out of. This is the one for 2014, so it's a little bit more recent. This was a playmat. This must have been like... I want this playmat! It's freaking terrifying, but I want it. Like, what is that?
Doom.
Like, if anyone's played Borderlands 2,
mm-hmm.
they added this enemy type called Threshers. And they have this sort of, like, big bulbous head, and then they have sort of eyes running down the length of their head, mm-hmm. and some of them have sort of a cluster up by where their head connects to the rest of their sort of snakeish body,
mm-hmm.
and they dive through the earth and pop up. And that's what I'm thinking here, because they've got the weird sort of, like, eyes down.
They look like those horrifying sea monsters you see on those, like, Nova specials when people dig too deep.
Yeah.
And stuff, and those little mini-subs.
But it's just, like, there's something creepy about the eyes along the neck.
Uh-huh.
Because it just makes it a little bit more, like...
the Ghiblis.
Yeah, it's one of those more, like, there's no way to sneak up on this thing! Mm-hmm. On top of the fact that it's, like, several hundred feet tall.
Uh-huh.
And the scale birds are smaller than its tiniest tooth.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no way to sneak up on this!
No.
And there's something disturbing about that whole, like, the lip...
They look like Prisoner Zero a little bit.
Yes, they do. But there's something extra weird about the lip thing.
Yeah, the way the mouth curls backwards.
The way that it... Even with the one who's got a closed mouth, it's as if they don't actually have lips.
Uh-huh.
But...
Yeah,
It's that creepy combination of it looks natural, but it also looks like the lips were sort of, like,
uh-huh.
cut off or peeled off in some really horrible way.
It's one of those things that is very foreign to our understanding of, you know, Earth-based anatomy and stuff, which makes scary.
That works really well here.
Yes.
It's also horribly disturbing,
mm-hmm.
but it looks so good.
Yeah.
So up next we have...
beastie.
Yes. So this is actually... First of all, I want to check that... It is the Tome of Decay.
Okay.
So this is one of the expansions for Black Crusade.
Dat Light Use.
Yeah.
Dat Light Use.
So this is a Plague Marine, one of the most likely a member of the Death Guard, who were one of the original 20 Space Marine legions of 10,000.
Mm-hmm.
This legion specifically turned away from the Emperor during the Horus Heresy and joined the... most of them went on to worship Chaos Undivided, which is the idea of all the Chaos Gods together.
Mm-hmm.
The Death Guard went on specifically to worship Nurgle, who is also known by a couple other names,
like mm-hmm.
The Great Father. Basically, his big thing is that he creates all pestilence, all disease, all things in the world,
mm-hmm.
and one of the ways that he attracts people is... through the idea of immortality,
mm-hmm.
because he's one of the few Chaos Gods who sort of has this idea that he actually helps his followers.
Mm-hmm.
He helps them by giving them horrible, debilitating diseases, mm-hmm. such that their bodies are in near constant pain at all times, mm-hmm. but eventually they begin to sort of shut that out,
uh-huh,
and
right.
the diseases tend to make them basically immortal.
It makes you stronger.
Yeah, like, they are permanently inflicted with these diseases. They don't go away,
uh-huh.
but...
They sort of, like, build up a resistance and tolerance.
Like, I mean, most of the... In the Warhammer 40,000 universe, most of the Chaos Space Marines who exist
mm-hmm.
are the same ones who rebelled 10,000 years prior.
Huh.
And they just...
Right.
The fact that they're Space Marines and they have basically awesome biology that was specifically manufactured...
Uh-huh.
By someone that most of mankind now thinks is a god.
Mm-hmm.
But also the fact that the Chaos Gods keep them alive. And Plague Marines who serve Nurgle are still, like, considered tougher than that.
Right.
I mean, look at this guy.
Yeah, you would not want to fuck with him.
This guy, the bottom half of his armor has fallen out, as has most of his flesh... such that his intestines are actively dangling. If you get a really good look at this art, you can see that some of those chains in there are actually, like, chained to his intestines,
mm-hmm.
along with skulls that he's just kind of gone, like, okay, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when
That'll hold everything in place.
Especially when you look at the way that some Plague Marines operate, they have a running tradition, shall we say, of emptying out skulls, or... not emptying them,
mm-hmm.
and leaving the rotting brain matter in, infecting it with one of their many diseases,
mm-hmm.
attaching some explosive charges to it, and using that as a biobomb and throwing it.
Uh-huh.
So there are so many things bad here.
Mm-hmm.
Just so many.
But gorgeous.
Oh, yeah. Very gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
Very, very disturbing. So up next we've got... this is actually some promo art that he did for Magma Spray.
Yeah.
So, obviously, Koth looking badass because it's Koth. I still cannot remember the name of his, like, race of people. But you see what I mean with the sort of, like, metal specifically on the hands?
Mm-hmm.
They tend to have it in as a replacement for hair as well.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Little bit of it on his shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like the way that he has this... Like, a lot of planeswalkers, they try to show some representation of how they cast, like, some representation on their body.
Uh-huh.
Like, when Jace uses magic, his tattoos tend to glow a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Same with Liliana, because she's got the, like, black demon tattoos over most of her mm-hmm. body, and they tend to glow. I like that, because he's a fire, he uses magma, he uses things like that. He sort of has, like, the cracks in the metal of his own body
mm-hmm.
begin to glow and radiate this magma. I just think it's really well done.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so pretty.
Mm-hmm. And there's something about, like, his design and the background that sort of reminds me of where Scar lived and stuff.
What you're talking about. I don't remember the name
stuff
of it.
And how they were, like, sort of, you know, the, you know, magma spurts and stuff.
Yeah.
And just has a sort of similar feel to that.
Just from his background, it looks like this is also, like, this would be the, I believe it's called the Oxid Ridge,
mm-hmm.
which is an area on Mirrodin. However, this is not Mirrodin.
Uh-huh.
This is New Phyrexia.
Uh-huh.
Like, just from the background, you can definitely tell that he's still on this plane, at least for a little bit, but this is not his home plane anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see what we've got up next. So obviously, I think we went over this one in enough detail.
Yep.
This was for Feral Invocation.
Yeah, but the bigger art is
nice.
Ooh.
So this is the alternate art for Eater of Hope.
It reminds me of the original villain in Digimon.
Do you mean the original? Oh, Devimon?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Right?
Sort of Devimon. There
wasn't
was also...
Devimon the little one? The little nugget?
Hmm?
Wasn't Devimon just like the little like chibi like bat
no,
thing?
No, first it... Oh, no. No, no.
And that
first
was like the
was...
little... What's
that
it?
Was Demi-Devimon.
Okay.
That was... He got killed and came back as like his rookie form.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, I can never remember his name, but there was a, like, Digimon at the very end who got sort of censored in the American version, who was basically this super... Oh, right, because in the Japanese version, there's basically a point where he, like, stabs into his own arm with his fingernails and just, like, drags.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah,
he,
that's
like,
not a thing,
there's just, like, these deep green cuts and he just sort of regenerates.
Yeah.
But he was basically this sort of, like, skinny, really creepy guy sitting on top of a massive dodecahedron.
Mm-hmm.
And I can never remember his name.
It needs to be in, you know, common parlance, that word.
And it sort of reminds me of this, but this is another one of the things where he's got this thing with eyes. Like, when you
I'm loving the gold plating across the chest there.
It's that idea that this is definitely a demon. This is a demon who it's, like... You need to give him things or else he's just going to wreck you.
Pay extortion.
And there's something about the sort of, like, almost claws on his wings.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is not natural.
Yeah.
Like, and you sort of look at it and it's like, you shouldn't be able to fly with that.
It's like, evil and manipulated and twisted and sick.
And but again, with, like, the eyes, I don't even know if they're real eyes, but just the way that it almost looks like there are eyes coming out of the sort of metal plate on his head and along his horns, which, again, aren't even symmetrical. It's just... Oh, God, it's so creepy, but it works so well because it's supposed to be creepy.
Mm-hmm. And you see, like, you know, the one person, you know, praying and stuff, and then the other person just being like, dear God, why
like
have you forsaken
us? One person
us?
Is just like, I'm not looking at you, I'm submitting. The other one's just like, please give me things, and the other one is just in the center like,
oh...
This was so wrong. Why did we do this?
I interpret it differently. I interpret this one as, you know, like, I'm praying and stuff, like, you know, have pity. And stuff. But the second one's being like, this is like a train wreck. I can't look away. I'm horrified. And this one being like, God, why have you forsaken us?
Yeah. I can definitely see that.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, cool. Different interpretations. Yeah, it's cool because we can't see their faces.
This was an Eater of Hope promo for the Theros expansion of Born of the Gods.
Ow.
You were just tormenting that poor idiot
dog. No, I'm not. I was telling him to lie down, and he decided to ram his head into my knee.
So this is the full, like, big version of the archetype of aggression.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, it's actually reversed from the card.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah.
And I like that you get a lot more of the detail in the background.
You can see a moon.
Yeah, you can see a moon. You can see this sort of, like, falling tower.
Uh-huh.
I like it. It's really nice.
Yeah, I was, like, just able to make out the falling tower in the other one, but it's much more obvious here, even though it's still a subtle.
Yeah. It's really nice, but it's still fairly simple.
Yep.
Oddly enough, on this monitor, it's actually quite a bit more red. On the other one, it's a little bit more toned down.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that's because of the angle or just because of the monitor.
Brightness and the different screen composition things.
This one's also running at 1080p. That one's some horrible, weird thing. It's like 786. It's weird.
Hmm.
So again, with the awesome, awesome Oresco Sun Guide.
Uh-huh.
This one is the Snake of the Golden Orchard. Serpent of the Golden Orchard.
Snake of the Golden Grove?
Yes, sorry. This is the one that's sort of the Adam and Eve reference.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very nicely done.
Yeah.
Horribly disturbing.
Yeah.
Oh, this is like the really nice version of the Fellhide Spirit something.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Fellhide Spirit Binder.
Okay.
I really like it. I like how you can also see the sort of fetishes that he's created for himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then this one I think is really interesting to compare how, you know, like orange it is over here and stuff, and then the more browns over there. Hit everything, Stephanie. Good job.
If you turn down the brightness when you're looking at this, you can see a lot more of the details of the actual Minotaur. Without it, it sort of blows it out and you get this really big, I guess, disassociation. Where
his horns almost look like crocodile tails.
Yeah, almost. I mean, I'd almost say that it might be crocodile jaws that he's wearing on the side of his head.
Yeah, that too.
I also like that he's sort of painting these things on the wall.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I sort of get the idea that that's sort of how he's doing the spirit binding.
Yeah,
just like
exactly.
He,
I was thinking that
he creates this, like, whatever it is that he's trying to emulate, he creates it and just sort of, like, wills it into existence or somehow uses the power of a god to bring it into existence, probably Purphoros, since creativity and creation.
Uh-huh.
I really like that. It's something you can't see on the small card art.
Yeah.
Let's see what we've got up next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this
All
one?
All of the guilds.
Uh-huh.
I like the card art. I just...
There's a bit of a disconnect.
Yeah.
I hear you.
And it's for just such an uninteresting card.
Mm-hmm.
This one, I like the use of the different swords.
I wonder if maybe he, like, just did, like, some sort of promo art, like, idea thing and stuff of having all those guilds together, and they're just like, we'll slap this on something because it looks pretty.
It's entirely possible, because, I mean, that's what he said with the MTG, the Judge promo art, the second one we looked at. Mm-hmm. It was like, they asked me to do it, and they don't have a card for it anymore, so here.
Here's a thing.
But I'm allowed to show it to you, so here.
Yeah.
Like, for some reason, I know it would not work in a sword, but I really like the sort of circle opening in the one in his right hand.
Yeah.
And the fact that the one on his left hand is almost like a gladius in design.
Mm-hmm.
I just like the difference there.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Especially opposed to the massive, like, spiked monstrosity that he's fighting. Yeah.
Like, the chains are so good. Once you know to look for them, they're amazing.
Especially when you look up at his shoulders and see that they are just, like, they're not even pierced in. They're just sort of just like someone took a meat hook and went, okay, it's in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What do we have next? Okay, so here. See, the Nemesis Immortal has, like, three eyes on that side, and they're not even evenly dispersed.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that wouldn't really help you to see. It just makes for creepies.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it wouldn't help us to see, but frankly, with this snake, I don't think he has any trouble finding food.
Uh-huh.
It's pretty much anything that moves he can just chomp on. Yeah. Dog, do not chew on your nails. Just trim those. So this is the cover for the second edition of Dark Heresy, which was announced, which was released, actually, a few days ago. Weeks ago, actually, but still.
Weeks is a kind of days.
Yeah. Fairly, like, as someone who's used to 40k art, I'd say, like, this is totally 40k art.
Mm-hmm.
But, not much to shout about. Mostly because it's just Inquisition. Inquisition I tend to find fairly uninteresting.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just me.
Damn.
So this would be the Tome of Excess,
mm-hmm.
following the chaos god Slaanesh.
Mm-hmm. It's very Gorgon.
Well, so Slaanesh is, depending on the depiction, ranges from hermaphroditic, sometimes literally split down the middle in terms of gender.
Uh-huh.
Different races refer to Slaanesh as a male or female. The Eldar specifically, who accidentally created her, refer to her as a female,
mm-hmm.
and is the one who is going to devour their souls when they die.
Okay.
she is the god of excess, specifically pain and pleasure.
So that's why she has massive, like, crab claws?
Well, this is one of the... I cannot remember the current name for them, but basically for a while they were just called demonettes.
Uh-huh.
She has massive crab claws, and depending on which version of actual 40K that she was made in,
mm-hmm.
she either is wearing, like, bondage corset and, like, nothing else,
uh-huh.
or
great.
She is wearing half of that, and the other half is three bare naked breasts.
How does that even... Oh.
It's, like, one smaller.
But, just, like, structurally, how does that, like, stay on?
Usually because it's just, like, massive strap along one shoulder. In this case, she appears to just be completely naked.
Uh-huh.
So usually it's all of their creatures tend to have, like, a weird combination of something horrible and painful looking and something very distinctly sexual.
Mm-hmm. What a world we live in.
Yeah. And that's just Slaanesh's things, which... I would assume that this book is also going to have a lot to do with, like, the different combat drugs and psychotic drugs that chaos warriors who follow Slaanesh will use.
Mm-hmm.
Very often they'll end up doing things like actively mutilating themselves before battle.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Horribly disturbing things like that. This is Galvanic Juggernaut.
Uh-huh.
This is a very goofy card that I have in my random commander deck.
Mm-hmm.
This is a deck where it's just, like, the cards in it are bad. Like, really bad. Most of them are basically...
Like, they're like a gun from IKEA?
No, not like that. There is no win condition for this deck. This deck is basically...
Silly?
It's basically every single one of these cards either is based around random chance or is everyone or I pick someone has to make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a decision that there is no real right answer to.
What's the new drafting thing they're trying to... What's it called?
Hmm?
The thing we did the episode on, like, right before I moved out. The new drafting style with the set. The really weird thing.
Oh, the new way that they're doing sets?
No, specifically it was, like, a drafting thing that a Friday Night Magic, or Loading Ready Run... got, like, a preview for, and it was
I have
weird.
No idea, because they haven't really changed anything with drafting.
It's not that they changed anything with drafting, it's just they came up with, like, this one particularly weird thing.
Oh, do you mean just the goofy format they came up with for the Friday Nights episode where there was no power?
No.
Okay.
No, it's an official Magic thing.
Oh, Pack Wars?
I don't think so. Doesn't sound right. There's, Like, there were, like, new card types, and, like, you, like, read off the kinds of cards as you drafted them.
Oh, the conspiracy ones where there were the...
Yes, conspiracy.
Yes.
There we go.
So those conspiracy set. This is actually from Ravnica.
Right. No, yeah. My point is that your deck is just sort of a collection of weird things, reminiscent of how conspiracy is a collection of weird things.
I'm just saying that because this is one of the cards in it. So Galvanic Juggernaut, I don't remember the exact card, but it's something along the lines of like a 4/4 for 5 or something like that, and mm-hmm. it's colorless. And I think it has to attack every turn. If it does damage, you have to flip a coin. If it's heads, you keep it. If it's tails, you have to sacrifice it, and... if it dies, or you have to sacrifice it, or anything sort of thing, you have to flip a coin, and if someone loses...
It's a bunch of really weird conditions.
It's a bunch of coin flips, and basically it has to attack every turn, and there's like a 50-50 chance that it will explode and deal damage to everything.
Okay.
And it's very awesome and silly.
Right. In itself is a gun from IKEA, but sometimes it works.
Yes. It's just super silly. And I like the fact that the goblin who is trying to pilot this is just like, I am not in the chair. Oh, God, let me get back in the chair.
Okay. Abort. Abort. Oh, goodness.
It's a goblin. He is not saying abort. He's getting, I'm going to get back in this chair and I'm going to punch you with the giant machine.
Hi, Bunny.
Yeah. So do you have anything else on this one?
I like the use of light to not necessarily, like, illustrate, you know, the figure itself, but to create the idea of chaos.
I do like the, especially since there are two different kinds of light that are almost actively intermingling in certain spaces. Mm-hmm. It's just, oh, so nice. And it is definitely, like, it is chaos.
Yes.
So, I don't even know what this one is. Ghost Wizard. The Ghost Wizard, an older piece I did for a talented Andrew Coors animated movie, The Begun of Tigtone? If you're wondering how this twisted anatomy is brought to life in the form of a crazy dead wizard, stop twisting your poor brain. Just turn over this link, and maybe you'll...
You are going to hear that loud and clear.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Because he did that right into the mic.
He's annoying. So this is for Ritual of Fire, the third cover for the series Fireborn. This is another Fantasy Flight game.
Mm-hmm.
He does good fire.
Yep.
He does really good fire.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone can deny that at this point.
Uh-huh.
But that sword... Like, if you really look into the details of that, there's a full-on, like, micronized human rib cage for a guard.
It's a bit hard to tell because there's a lot of sort of similar colors and stuff, and also my eyes are just shutting down at this point.
Yeah.
But,
oh, it's just very, very beautiful.
Uh-huh.
So up next is, I believe this one is also
so much
Fireborn.
Lighting changes during the course of this video.
Yeah. So this is another Fireborn. This is from the second cover. Again, I think this one seems to have sort of like dragonish themes overall.
Personally, I just love the idea of like the bell tower. It sort of takes me back to Innistrad and I guess my college a little bit, actually. And so that's where this is taking place. I love that as a setting.
I also really like the dragon design.
Because,
I mean, you've got this almost ghostly fire dragon, but at the same time, you have a very westernized dragon... head with for some reason the odd sort of eastern dragon mustache sort of thing, but the rest of the body is very eastern in the long serpentine style.
I dig it for true.
And I like the sort of emblem of whatever this place is that the dragon is sort of wrapping itself around and has a claw on, and how the colors seem to really work with it, but that emblem is the only place where you really see gold. Like, you see the purple everywhere, but that's a nice little, like, it's its own thing. It really draws your eye to it because you don't see gold anywhere else in the art. So this is, what, Tome of Blood? Yes.
Creepy.
So this is for the Chaos Space Marines who follow Khorne, the blood god, god of horrible destruction and maiming, the only Chaos god who actively abhors psychers and magic users, such that he'll basically kill them outright. If you've ever heard someone shout, blood for the blood god, skulls for the skull throne, Khorne is the guy they're talking about. This is one of his servants.
I know.
This is probably one of his more normal-looking servants. Okay, so this is actually pretty silly. So this is a skin for League of Legends. For, what is it, Nautilus. That they commissioned him to do.
Oh, goodness.
This is
He's not that boring.
Shut up. This is the concept art that Kolros did for them before it got basically turned 3D. And I don't have the finished one on hand, but I believe it looks fairly similar to this, just less detailed, quite frankly.
Right, yeah. Because why are you licking my knee?
Because he's weird.
Okay.
So.
This one.
This is the first art he ever did in magic.
Okay, there you go.
I don't...
Or just leave your butt here, that's cool.
So this is the Water Courser. Sorry, I just wanted to look up the name.
And,
yeah.
It's so hard to draw, paint, water, and look at this.
Yeah.
It makes it look easy.
And
I'm
when
so
you,
angry.
Especially when you...
Good lord.
Get off the couch and move your butt. When you look at this on the card art, you can't tell that there is a face on this. It just looks like it's some kind of horrifying water-based snake thing.
Uh-huh.
But here, you see, that there is almost a human face there.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it also has a creepy Nicol Bolas thing going on, because you see at the very top it has the sort of horns and the single floating drop in between.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, now he's backing into my leg.
And I can't, young sir. I can't.
And I like the use of the, I don't think they're actually lotuses, but the sort of flower blooms.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though you have that water is blue sort of thing.
Yeah, those really add the sharp, bright blue.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
And I like that they also have this single, like, red center that really adds just a little bit of juxtaposition. Because, I mean, the rest of this, you've got sort of black themes, you've got the very bright, almost rising sun, but everything else is sort of bland, because you're trying to focus on this very, what is the opposite of opaque? Transparent.
Uh-huh.
This very transparent creature. And I just like the nice use of a few little colors to really draw your attention. What are you doing? My dog is nuts. This is the Tome of Fate that he did. So this is following the chaos god Tzeentch, who's the god of sort of time, chaos. He is the...
That's not sitting.
He describes himself as the player of the great game. Basically, he's...
Keep your hands to yourself.
basically, he's playing an endless chess game where the point is to just make sure that the game keeps going.
Mm-hmm.
This would be one of his demons. His demons tend to be very, like, pure chaotic. Mm-hmm. They don't make anatomical sense. They have mouths coming out of everywhere. They have eyes in places that shouldn't actually make sense.
Mouth.
Yeah. Like, I have mouths on my elbows. Sorry, wait, no. I only have it on three of my elbows. Why do you have more than three elbows? Oh, I've got eight. Why? Well, because two of them are flamethrowers and these three are mouths. What do you mean? Like, I'm not kidding. That was actually a form of demon that served this god at one point. So this is part of Tad.
Yes, you're a majestic beast.
So I don't actually know what Tad is. He's got a couple of these that say that they're Tad dream assignment. So I don't know what
the art department. Something.
Like, I don't know if that's a dragon or some kind of land snake with a bat face.
I just know that I love it.
Yeah.
And I want Tolkien to come back from the dead and write a story about it.
I wanted to see it colorized, honestly. I want to see what that looks like in color. Oh.
I think I'm good with it. I think in my mind it's gold.
Ooh, I wasn't thinking that. See, I'm...
Because I was, like, thinking, you know, like, green or red, and I was like, that's not right, and gold.
See, I look at it, and I almost get sort of, like, this black, deep brown sort of thing, because the face looks like a bat face to me.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So I get this idea of, like, something dark, something that doesn't see the light of day.
Uh-huh. We don't let it.
Yeah. Oh, it's just so bad. I don't know what this one is. Figure painting.
That's just an exercise in...
Ooh.
I love this one so much. Because, I mean, if you know anything about me, you know how much I love, like, Once Upon a Time in fantasy. And just, you know, that part of my childhood has, like, never left me. And
see,
I,
you know, I'm just one of those people who really, like, clicked with the idea of the grim fairy tales.
Mm-hmm.
And this just makes me go, like, bad touch, bad touch.
Yeah.
And if you've ever watched...
Well, I'm remembering our Innistrad, you know, studies and stuff.
And, well, and I'm just remembering, like, the idea of where... Well, one of the theories behind the original Little Red Riding story.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's a couple, but...
That's what I was kind of getting to.
There
because of Innistrad, we...
Yeah, we did actually go over that, didn't we? Yeah.
Uh-huh. I remember if we actually did the episode, but we at least researched it.
Basically, I would warn... we definitely did, because we went over the Innistrad tribes really heavy.
Uh-huh. I know we did the research for all of them, but I don't remember actually filming the episodes.
I know we did zombies, I know we did werewolves.
Mm-hmm.
We did vampires, and we did ghosts. I don't think we did people. But, yeah, people
are
kind of boring.
We're people. We know people, more or less. As much as you can know someone.
Ah.
But, anyway, point is, you know, there's just such, like, the fantasy element, you know, like those, you know, Disney stories all grown up.
Yeah.
The way that, you know, the Grimm Brothers intended in this.
I would highly suggest if you are, like, prepared, go look up the original story for Little Red Riding Hood. Depending on where you get it from, you'll either get sort of a coming-of-age idea, where the red cloak is sort of supposed to symbolize one of the horrible things that comes with puberty. Or, if you go to the other really bad route, you'll get sort of a fable about not getting raped.
Yep.
It's...
Wolves.
Yeah, it's a very dark story when you go into the real roots of it. So I would warn you before you go looking for it. But if you think you are can handle that, it's really interesting to try to learn some of that stuff, where it came from.
And then, oh, I love these.
I'm not entirely sure what's going on in this
one. So the thing that I think I need to point out, like both of this one and the last one, is so we've not shut up about how great he is with light. These prove how great he is with shadow.
Yes. Which still sort of shows how good he is with light, because it's... You have to...
The other end of the same...
The fact that these are completely colorless. And he's portraying, like, light and shadow beautifully without having other colors to reflect that.
There's the one, like, female figure. I can't quite tell what that is. There's a moon behind her. And it's still, you're getting so much idea of darkness and light. And it's so good.
She's minorly disturbing me because she appears to have four arms, along with the fact that she has very, like, a very, almost like, fat snake lower half.
Yeah, I was about to say slug.
It appears to have, like, scales, but there's something about the way that the body is sort of segmented.
It's very, what is it, Jabba the Hutt?
Yeah, it's very, and I was never able to really associate, like, is that reptilian?
Or the slug?
Yeah. It appears invertebrate-like, but it's, but something about it just seems too large, especially with a human upper half. I don't think there's any way you could really go from vertebrate to the lower half of one's body, which takes up more than 50% of it, having no spine. So it just feels odd.
Yeah, it's very alien and disturbing.
And there's something a little bit odd about the rider as well. Almost as if he sort of, like, cuts off. Like, it looks like there should be more to the horse, but it just cuts off and fades into this shadow.
Oh,
I don't know. There's just something a little bit odd about that one. So this is another one of the Tad things. Spring 2012.
I want to say it's like a school or something.
I get that feeling,
Because, you know, a lot of them say like assignments.
Yeah, because it's Tad composition and color fictive poster assignment. I think we I completely forgot to mention that, by the way, Matthias Kollross is actually, I don't know if he's still there right now, but I know that he is Austrian. And I believe at least until recently he was living there. He might still be there. I just don't know for sure right now. But
probably, you know, something, you know, like something Academy, blah, blah, blah.
Entirely possible.
Does it say?
No, it says...
On top of Tad, on the picture, like, there's something that says the.
The art department.
Oh, yeah.
Harness your imagination, apply now for January 2011 scholarships.
Isn't that
available?
What I said originally? I think the art department?
Yeah.
Cool. Go me.
Something about this I really like. I don't know why, though. Just something about the...
I think part of it is what we... There's the pink and green.
Yeah, but there's just something about the way that... It's almost like it's being portrayed as blood, but it's not supposed to be blood. That is just actively dripping from her body, and she doesn't seem to care. Or even react.
I don't know what it is. This is just so natural
to her.
I can't pinpoint it. It's just gorgeously done.
Yeah. And I like the sort of almost flowers in the background, so it's hard to tell what is supposed to be part of her and what is the background. It's just, oh god, it's pretty.
Yeah.
So pretty. This is, what is this? Oh, this is the actual cover for, no it's not. Another cover job with high fun potential, painting a badass Chaos Lord with freedom to his armor. Yeah, so I guess this is the cover for Black Crusade, the like core book. Yeah, pretty nice. Nothing too amazing, but pretty nice. This is one of the cover for a novel written by Tracy Hickman, a Fantasy Flight book.
I'd love to write a book and have him do the cover.
I get the feeling it might be expensive.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Write a good book.
Okay.
Yeah, I love
That was implied, Stephen.
Yeah, I love the phantasmal sort of the way that it parts of it are completely opaque, and as you sort of move out from the head, it gets more and more transparent.
Uh-huh, like it, spading into, mist and steam. And
yeah, it's so pretty. So pretty. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I didn't break anything. Sweet.
Yay!
I just wanted to check and see if there was anyone else in chat, but
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God, it's so pretty. Now then, next. What is this one? Cover for Warhammer Invasion Legends. Not an easy task to walk footsteps of Darken 8. I don't know that person, but okay. So this is the fantasy setting for Warhammer, where it's,
That's good.
Yeah?
It's good.
Yeah, it really is.
I'm
a little bit weirded out by the griffin who has teeth, but I know that that is actually, for some reason, a canon thing with Warhammer, and I don't like it, but it is. But, oh, God, it's pretty.
I kind of... I'd love for him to illustrate a, Lord of the Rings book, or Lord of the Rings edition, or other Tolkien book. Silmarillion. I'd love to see him tackle the Silmarillion.
This is really nice, and in ways that I can't quite describe, though.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of the implication that there is at least these two creatures here who are so completely different.
I sort of like the idea that the new focus is like the frame and stuff, and the center is very sort of nondescript and vague and unfocused. Yeah.
I just really like the idea. I'd almost compare it to sort of the classic idea of like Japanese kaiju, where you have these two very different massive creatures, and then you have the rest of something else taking place around them.
I love his not fear of color.
Yeah. Like, these are very bold, bright, brash colors.
Yeah, everything calls your attention, and yet, and obviously it's supposed to be chaotic, and so it works, but at the same time it's not over-demanding.
Yeah,
and
it's chaotic in such a way that it's not schizophrenic. It doesn't draw your eye to several places at once.
My favorite phrase that I've come up with is a choreographed chaos.
Yes, because there's a natural progression to it. No matter where you start, there's sort of a natural progression, which is what I was talking about with crash lines. Because if you start with the people, you have the natural progression of following their laser fire down towards the lower ridge, which will sort of then direct your eyes up to this first sort of dragonfly creature, whose tail then is wrapping all the way around the other creature and the mountain. So no matter where you start, there's sort of this natural progression that helps you move to the next spot. Yeah. It's beautiful use of crash points. And it's just beautiful to begin with, too.
Again, more applause.
Yeah.
I kind of want to find out you go.
What this was, where this was for. And I do like that someone else in the comments for this, because this is his personal DeviantArt, is pointing out that they really like that he's sort of returned to kind of goofy classicness with the space, space marines. Because you've got these, big, puffy suits and these overly ridiculous guns as opposed to the sort of stripped down very tight things that we've been seeing a lot lately.
Yeah.
And I think that lends more towards this sort of cartoony idea that he's going for here, and it works so well.
Yeah.
Let's see, what is next? So this is
kick-ass little dwarf.
This is something that he did for Wizards of the Coast.
Dwarf looks versus like it was, hook.
Looks like it was probably for some kind of D&D thing. The hook in this case, I'm not sure what it is.
It's like it's got a beak, but it seems almost snake-like.
I'd say reptilian? I'd bet that it was descended from something bird-like, just because of the design. It almost looks like a plucked bird. Like, it's sort of scaly.
I sort of like the idea of it being, a realistic sort of dragon-dinosaur thing, because, how we say, birds are dinosaurs and stuff, and... But we think of dinosaurs as being more reptilian and scaly, and birds are, of course, feathered and
but
stuff.
But at the same time, he's got its arms. So, as we can see from the back, it has these smaller legs that sort of descend down the sides. But it has these very muscular forearms that seem to end in very...
Centipede or millipede.
Yeah. Except that the forearm, the frontmost legs, I guess, technically, seem to be much larger and seem to be much more, they seem to be single talons that are very large. However, of course, we do have to take into account that this is a dwarf. So the scale is a little bit weird, but
And then I love the purple on the sort of crown.
Yeah. Well, there's purple in the dwarf's armor. There's purple around the hook creature's head.
Mm-hmm.
I also like that the dwarf appears to have, like, three talons. Those are on his shield. Those aren't attached to this creature anyhow.
Right.
Like, that is somehow attached to his shield. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it would be very effective, but it looks very cool. So this
more purple, more excellent use of purple and gold. Favorite.
Final image of the worm teaser. Title is inspired by a song of Paco de Lucia and John
McLaughlin.
McLaughlin. Uh-huh. Cheerio.
Uh-huh. Meeting of the Spirits. It's called. I don't even know what to say. It's so good.
There's something charged, and almost.
The way the wing seems to be coming off the forearm and just this sort of, what's the word?
Like a fin.
No, that's not the word I'm looking for.
Okay.
I mean, yes, but that's not what I'm looking for.
I know.
Like, dragonfly, hummingbird.
I don't know.
The way the light hits and... iridescent.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah, I can definitely see that.
Uh-huh.
And there's...
the iridescent sort of film and...
There's something odd about the way that... Not even odd, just... I hate to say it, but it almost feels like the entire picture, not just the clearly, like, fairly scantily clad woman, but the entire picture has this almost, like, charged sexualization to it.
Mm-hmm.
And not in a, like, I feel bad for looking at this kind of way, but kind of a, this seems very powerful and very important.
Yeah, like, even just the leaves on the steps, you know, leading to this altar or whatever this is. This tomb monument.
And just the way that it... the way that she's holding her hand is almost as if she's tied up, but she's not.
Uh-huh.
And the way that this creature is sort of hanging over her.
Uh-huh.
Like...
But in the same way, it seems sort of reserved and held back. Like, it could be more vicious.
Like, it's almost protective.
Almost gentle.
Yeah, almost. As gentle as something like this could be.
Yeah.
I just think it's very, very well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, the mountains and the mist in the background.
The elephant drawn. This just looks silly.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's great.
The Elephantron. I don't think there's much we can say about this, but
the use of color in the background is just phenomenal.
I also like the use of the green that doesn't really appear anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And the silliness of the stop sign. Just that one little thing that shows you, like, whoa, that's really big.
Yeah.
And that's something you could go entirely without noticing.
Yeah.
Just like the fact that it is wearing a...
Yeah, no, you could have thought he was totally, you know, just, you know, like a large human size and stuff. But then, wait, no, that stop sign on his head.
And then you look down a little bit more and go, oh, wait, he's got, like, human skulls hanging from him.
Yeah.
How big is this thing? Oh, my God. It's, like, better than scale birds.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And this is the...
Oh, close up on our gentle dragon friend.
Gentle. Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
So this is... Not very explanative.
Isn't that the thing that we saw earlier, just to close up?
No, that was the... Okay. That was the... Oh, actually, I think that's probably what it was for. Ugh. Uh-huh.
That's the thing you have nightmares about.
Yeah, something about the way that, like, the jaw disconnects right here, where you would expect it, like...
Uh-huh.
Where
you'd
almost expect to see the bone right here, connecting right below your ear. But
yeah,
instead, it's
almost like the fangs are on the outside.
Yeah.
And,
okay, that's creepy.
Mm-hmm. That's great. There's no other word for that. That's just great.
That's just hilarious.
Oh, that eye on the shoulder makes that look like another creature, but then you see and, oh, that's cool.
Sorry, this feels familiar to me, but yeah, that is beautiful and creepy.
Mm-hmm.
And this seems to be a little bit more, like, almost sketched.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Like, less...
The way the blending of the light, like, it's still very excellent use of lighting and shadow and shading, but...
like, almost as if it was more of a, I want to do something relaxing, less I'm doing something commissioned or for work.
Yeah.
And I like it. It's nice.
Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah, nice and simple.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's kind of nice to see him do, like, some humans and stuff.
Yeah.
And...
He doesn't really do a lot of fairly plain humans, but still.
Yeah.
I believe this was for D&D. No, this is for... an art order challenge.
Hmm.
Sort of a horrible satyr, I'm guessing.
Hmm.
Oh, I didn't realize this was a GIF. Oh.
Oh.
Yeah, so this is the drawing of the demon.
This is everything we've ever dreamed, Steven. We get to see the process. We're just going to watch this for like 15 minutes.
I love this, how you start with the very basic sort of shadow design. I like that this shows us really how he gets that perfect lighting, is start with the shadows
and
build on top of that. Uh-huh. And in a really disturbing way, you can actually see that he almost like starts with no armor, like has the almost naked form of this creature.
And then start with the skeleton and then build it on.
Yeah, like even going so far as like, if you look closely at the very beginning of this loop, right there, he even has like the like breasts where he's going to attach these horrifying like nipple daggers. But before that, he has it drawn as if there's nothing there.
Uh-huh.
Oh God, it's beautiful. Horrible, beautiful.
I love it. I love it so much.
It is an assassin devil.
Uh-huh.
That's Birth of the Homunculus. Seems appropriate. Makes me think of Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood.
Mm-hmm. That's another thing nightmares are made of.
Yep, pretty much. Okay, so this is really cool because I've actually seen the finished product of this one.
Nice. Oh. This is so creepy.
Yeah.
That's great.
And I just like how it zooms out.
It reminds me of the Fry's back in Burbank.
Yeah, it does. If you've never been to a Fry's, they're an electronics store.
Mm-hmm.
And they
Each
tend
one
to have
of them
some.
Is themed.
Yeah, they tend to have some kind of theme. The one in our hometown is what, like B movie 60s monsters.
Uh-huh.
So there's like giant octopus crashing through one wall.
There's like a spaceship crashed into the front.
There's
facade.
Green alien guys, mm-hmm, who are like shooting and melting military cars.
There's giant ants.
Yeah, there's giant ants. There's the robot from, I think it's The Day the Earth Stood Still, carrying a woman in like the very center of the mall,
mm-hmm,
or the store.
Yeah.
That is so
It's
creepy.
A thing you should add to your sightseeing list if you go to Hollywood.
Yeah. If you ever go to Burbank, technically, but...
Well, it's on the other side of the hill.
Yeah. It's on the good side of the hill. A little bit of Alice in Wonderland creepiness.
I like it.
Yeah. It's very nice.
I need to read through The Looking Glass still.
This is...
Damn it, I don't have my pencils. I have really fancy watercolor ink-tense pencils from England.
She seems very nonchalant, considering that's some kind of demon undead
thing.
It's
weird because it looks like he's smiling, and he's got this sort of friendliness about him, despite the terrifyingness of his...
See, I think part of that is just because of the angle of his face, and I think that's sort of what I almost find comedic about this, mm-hmm, is the angle of his face, and the lack of the lips means he can't do anything but smile.
Mm.
And I think it makes him feel a lot more disarming than he really is.
Probably. But I like the idea that it's kind of her oafish pet who does whatever horrible things at her beckon.
So this is actually part of a series of, like, portraits that he's got, mm-hmm, that are all terrifyingly lifelike.
Oh my god.
Then this is, what, the core? My final work for Don Siegmiller's Face and Figure Painting Workshop. Okay. So this is just some more stuff that he did for, like, practice.
Ooh.
This is Epic Battle Between Two Grandmasters.
Mm-hmm. Dragon style.
Yeah. I love the fans.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're...
I love the cherry blossoms.
Oh, yeah. It's very... stereotypical, but it's so beautifully done.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with that at all. This is very nice, and I think this might actually sort of be the same woman who we've already seen. Just more in control of this horrible thing. No, because the dragon doesn't have the sort of, like, fins on the arms.
Mm-hmm.
It's just very similar style.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, he's got this beautiful use of purple and this beautiful use of, like, the sun shining in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when it comes through the sort of thin membrane of the wings. I just love that.
Yeah.
Creepy.
Mm-hmm. But cool.
Very.
Creepy.
I believe this one he actually won an award for,
uh-huh,
that I don't remember the name of. Like, but, eh. Still. Creepy, cool.
There's something...
5 o'clock in Orc's Land.
Uh-huh. I love the idea.
They're taking tea.
I kind of love that idea. Yeah. It's brilliant, as creepy as it is, that juxtaposition.
I like the little kitten. Like, the little kitten who's wearing a spiked collar.
Ow!
Yeah.
Oh, it just makes me miss my kitty.
I'd almost say this belongs in Teemer, but...
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Almost.
Yeah. So this is one of the things that he's actually got up on his personal site, his portfolio site.
Uh-huh.
Apparently this is a cow.
What?
I don't know. It's called Hellish Cow.
Huh.
And the first comment on
is
his DeviantArt...
Is it cow in the way that manatees are called sea cows?
I don't know. But the first comment on this from 2010 on his, OMG, if this is a cow, I don't want to see the farmer. This would be Smurf Stomper. Like, when you look at this, I don't even notice the Smurfs at first.
Mm-hmm.
Because they just blend in with the environment so perfectly as opposed to this creepy muscle
thing. Jack-lantern head thing.
Yeah. Almost. Well, it's not even jack-lantern, it's just like there's nothing there. Mm-hmm. It's literally a mouth and nothing else.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Creepy. Great.
Very.
The moon.
That one was... Something about the head on this thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It reminds me of, like, aphids, because they have that sort of, like, trying to look like a rose thorn thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, an insectoid rhinoceros or something.
Yeah. And there's this horrible, creepy thing.
Uh-huh.
Which is entitled Nosferatu.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah.
That's horrifying and fantastic.
Yeah. I think we're getting near the end here. So we've just got some basic werewolf.
Would have loved to see that in Innistrad.
Ooh. I don't know why, but I really like the sort of tentacle growths on both hands and the, like, long talons.
Uh-huh. This is my idea of, like, an anime fantasy poison ivy.
Oh, yeah, almost. This I find horribly disturbing.
Uh-huh.
Because it's... Oops, nope.
What's it called? Trick or treat.
Because it's this horrible monstrosity and... controlling these three trick-or-treaters.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yep.
That's a nope.
Let's nope.
Barbarian.
Mm-hmm.
Creepy jellyfish thing.
Ooh, ginger.
And horrible insectoid monster thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this is the last one. The wall.
Oh, it's cool to see him do more, you know, like, comic book kind of
style. Yeah. I wouldn't even say... I don't want to say comic book, but more...
Oh, it's the more, like, vector.
I'm going to take your word for it.
Yeah, because the way it's... It's not, like, shaded and stuff.
Yeah.
It's more block style.
Yeah.
You would do that... You would draw that in Illustrator as opposed to painting in Photoshop.
Yes. Although, from what I've read, he mostly uses Photoshop, but I don't know for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but you could do that in Photoshop, but it would be using the pen/vector tools and stuff, and thus it would be easier to do that in Illustrator, most likely.
Yeah, that I can
understand. That's what Illustrator was designed to do.
So I'm going to open something up real quick.
It's getting dark.
It is.
Now I wish we had some horrible backlighting.
That'd be nice. So let's just jump back to... God, come on, where's my mouse?
Son of a biscuit.
Okay. Trusting you to distract them for a second.
God dang it. You need to prepare me for these things.
Well, I didn't know I was going to have to ask.
Oliver, do you want to come entertain the people with me? Let's see.
There we go.
Really? I don't know how helpful that was. We can pretend. Imagination time, guys.
Well, with that, I think that's pretty much all that we've really got, though, because...
Yep.
I mean, we were going for a while there. I'm going to try not to think about how long that was.
I feel like that's one of the things that's just down at the bottom there.
It probably does, but I'm trying to ignore it.
Okay.
So with that, I think we are basically done here.
Success!
Yes.
Hopefully it didn't record us like robots.
Yeah, here's hoping. Worst case, I'll have to rip the audio from this.
Mm-hmm.
So, we have been the show of Feast and Famine. This has been our first ever live-streamed podcast, which will be going up on YouTube shortly anyway.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully it was... Mostly a success.
I think it was not too bad.
Wasn't completely horrible.
Next time we do an artist episode, I think we should go a little bit more specific so we don't take so long at all.
Right. Yeah. Prep beforehand. And we'll use a better webcam.
Yeah, I was going to say, steal your webcam, since apparently yours is much better.
Uh-huh. I don't think it does 1080, but it definitely does 720.
Okay. And with that, please remember you can always email us at showoffnf.com.
Mm-hmm.
showoffnf@gmail.com. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You can find our site where everything goes no matter what. showoffnf.com. We're still on MTGcast as always.
Mm-hmm.
That tends to go up like between 20 minutes and a day later than I post it.
Mm-hmm.
We have our iTunes feed. You can follow me at Cap America,
and
it says in the show notes,
and
on
I'm
Twitter.
At Stefan F. Not that anyone ever remembers or that I ever use my Twitter, but we can pretend.
All of it is in the show notes. If you ever want to contact us, we are we go minorly crazy for like anyone who contacts us.
We need attention. This isn't enough. That dog over there is crazy. Yeah, we need human interaction.
Yeah.
Besides each other.
But thank you all very much for watching, listening, or whatever medium you've consumed this in. If you've figured out a way to, like, smell video and audio, I would really like to know how.
Yeah. Email me first, and then I'll tell him.
We use the same... whatever. Thank you all very much for watching. I'm going to try to get over to the right screen so I can stop the recording.
I believe
and,
yes.
At the very least, for our audio listeners, I'll put in the...
links to all the arts and stuff?
The actual... Well, yes. The description on YouTube and the link and the description for the podcast and everything. We'll have all of the links so you can find Matthias Kolaros's, like, deviant art, the gatherer thing that we use to find all of his specific art.
His website.
His website. All of his website, most of his website art is up on his DeviantArt, but still his actual, like, portfolio site that he uses professionally is really cool. And I will also play a little bit of the second Razia's Shadow music.
Track?
Track.
Track, yeah. Second track.
The second track, I can't remember what the track is.
There's only one Razia's Shadow.
I know. And obviously, again, we'll link to that. You should definitely check it out. Forgive Durden, I think, did two albums ever, but they're both...
Yeah.
Razia's Shadow is very good. I've heard bits and pieces of the other one, and it was what I heard was good.
Yeah.
So we'll be going through that for probably, like, the next month or so with episodes. We'll throw it in for breaks or anything. So, we will see y'all next week.
Hopefully.
Bye.